Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekend Confirmed for Friday, July 15th, the official podcast of ShaqNews.com. I finally get to say that. My name is Zav DeMatos, filling in for Mr. Garnett Lee, who is globetrotting in Japan.
Yeah, he's on vacation, living it up.
Living it up. And to my left now, finally, because I'm usually sitting to the right of you.
That's right.
Mr. Jeff Kanata, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. That's two N's, one T, of course. And the inmates are running the asylum today, Zav.
Yeah, and we're going to see how that goes and whether or not people are still listening to the show. Because as a fan of the show, if I heard this episode, probably would turn it off by now.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not a fan of yourself?
No, I don't listen to the things that I actually do.
Well, we have some good guests.
We do have some good guests.
Maybe that'll make you stick around.
I'm going to start around the room. Oh, geez, I'm already hitting the microphone. Jeez. On the far end of the table from TRS, Mr. Dan Trachtenberg. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
That's right.
We have two-thirds of TRS with us.
That's right.
And over there to the other side of the table, Mr. Andy Reid, DJ Andy Reid.
What's going on?
You've heard his music.
Two newbies.
Garnett invites me on the show and then leaves.
Yeah, he basically scheduled you on here and was like, where can I go this furthest away from Andy Reid?
Let me go to Japan.
Fellow Canadian, by the way.
Fellow Canadian, that's right.
So we're going to talk about hockey and
hockey, Tim Hortons and pea meal bacon. And you don't even know what that is.
And maple cookies, because I know Jeff Kanata. You like a good maple cookie.
I love the maple cookie. And ketchup chips, right?
Ketchup chips.
I found that weird that America I hate them. I hate them too.
So disgusting.
But America loves ketchup. So why are you not on the ketchup chip bandwagon?
Well, America loves chocolate, but I don't really love chocolate
chips.
Gross.
You do love chocolate
chips.
I know. I hate chocolate chips. Oh.
Hey, before we get too far into the show, I want to say we have Dan's on the show. He's on Totally Retro. I'm on Totally Retro. And if you are going to Comic-Con, Totally Rad Show is going to be there. We have a panel Friday night at 8 o'clock in room 7AB. It's going to be a lot of fun, and usually I say at the end of the show, but I wanted to put it out right at the beginning because this is the week. If you're hearing this, it's next week is Comic-Con, so
you guys getting
depending
excited
on
to
when
go?
You hear it.
And an exclusive video game thing. We're the only...
We don't want to reveal too much, but it's
no.
a big surprise.
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
And now video game people will be excited about
it. Exactly. I'm upset I'm not going to Comic-Con now. I want to go to Comic-Con.
It's where big things happen.
It's where big things happen.
Our panel has it.
That's awesome. You guys super excited to go, obviously.
Yes. Extremely.
You guys have done this before, though, right?
Five years.
Wow.
It's our fourth panel. Yeah. Fifth year of the show covering Comic-Con.
That's huge.
Nice.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to do just a basic standard show for you. We have What Are You Playing in the first segment, second segment.
Oh, no cha?
Still, What Are You Playing?
No
whatcha playing? W-R-U-P. Third segment, we have listener feedback. I printed off a lot of stuff from the last episode, everything from the Wii U. I know Andy Reid has a few things to say about that, and Nintendo in general. Linearity in games, there's a ton of stuff here, strategy titles, and then we're going to go do the news. But I thought... Since a lot of us are talking about stuff that's already been released, Dan, I know you're playing Miss Explosion Man. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, I only just started playing it, but I wanted to bring it up because it is an absolute joy from the get-go, as the first one was. What's interesting about it, though, is that you guys, probably, the game engine or the people developing or something, there's the intro, the sort of tag in the beginning of the game is all shot live action, uh-huh. which is what is... so fun about the ending of the first game. There's a live action bit that's great. You don't see a lot of live action stuff in video games these days, and I'm very upset about that. As Sega CD is my favorite console of all time.
you want to see more of those light gun shooters?
The games like Sewer Shark, Lodestar, Ground Zero Texas.
Well, the last, not to sidetrack this whole conversation, but the last Metal Gear Solid had awesome kind of live action stuff at the beginning. How do you feel about one of the recent Need for Speeds did that, integrated people, real people
it's
into
true. Prototype
yeah,
did that as
sort
well.
Sort of like painted over it a little bit to give it a sort of a artistic
flair
to it.
Are we past the day when FMV is a bad word?
I hope we are. I hope we re-enter that phase, because to me it's even – I know – I think you've mentioned before, and it's a common thing that people like the immersion of staying in-engine.
Mm-hmm.
But I love – I mean, the in-engine still does not look obviously like reality.
Right.
There's something about when I'm seeing because Prototype had a little bit of live-action stuff in it, full-motion video in it, and it – you know, when we're playing a video game, it all feels like video game military and video game whatever. And then when you see live action in a game, you go, oh, that's what – like gives me perspective on what I'm doing. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a real military guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It grounds it for me.
And I wonder if we've gotten to the point now where there's so much film and television that has a real human being interacting with digital creations, if we've sort of gotten – It's more palatable now,
yeah,
because we've gotten used to it.
Well, and also maybe because, you know, the technology has advanced so high that it doesn't look like, you know, a PS1 game with realistic with FMV in it. You can tell the major difference between the two worlds.
Yeah.
Now it's probably a little bit less like that. But that's Twisted Pixel does love doing that.
Yeah. And I think it's the people that made their engine. They have this tag in the beginning that's like these guys work toiling away on microchips and whatever, and it ends on the guy saying, "Your turn, Unreal." Like, as if their engine has anything to do with it. It's hilarious.
It's awesome.
But Misplosion Man, as far as I can tell, is much more cinematic than the first Splosion Man. Splosion Man, it all sort of took place in that laboratory. And this, right away, you're like jumping on from flying car to flying car. And there's a lot of really fun, just the voice of the game. Is very whimsical, brings the whimsy.
Nice.
And she has all these little, your character has constantly saying these funny little quips as you're playing the game that just make it so much more wonderful. But the thing about it, it's going to bring me to the next game that I've been playing over the past couple of weeks, is Mirror's Edge. And Misplosion Man and Mirror's Edge have a soft spot in my heart, as well as Bionic Commando that I've also been playing
again
this
week.
Been replaying both of them.
Yeah, which Bionic Commando?
Finishing them. The remake. The
Rearmed?
Not the
the wife armed version?
The 3D version. The big.
It's called Rearmed, right?
It is called Rearmed. But not the side scrolling.
Not the good one.
Update.
Not the 2D.
Right. The one that only I like. But what all these games do, even the Splosion Man games, they are really fun. They make me feel good playing them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just challenging games. Like, I love the sense – when I play Call of Duty, I love Call of Duty. It's one of my favorite, you know. But when I play it, I don't actually feel, like, exhilarated. I don't feel
– Why? Because you're
joyous.
Tense.
Yeah, I'm tense and I'm figuring out things and, you know. Playing Mirror's Edge, I feel like I'm floating. Like, it just actually, like, gives me a – sensation of wonderfulness, you know,
really?
as does Bionic. When I'm swinging around on that thing and I really feel the sensation,
even when you hit those invisible walls of death,
I'm pretty good at that game, so I don't hit those invisible walls. And even Explosion Man, when you get that three jump thing, just feels so yummy.
Do you think you feel the same way? Have you played Mirror's Edge on the iOS platform at all?
I have. I actually really like it.
Do you? Okay.
I love it. Yeah.
So I was just wondering whether or not you kind of have that feeling, because it's sort of that first person and you're building momentum yourself, and it's in that.
The key thing with that game is that momentum, is that once you have it, you never want to lose it.
Right.
Because you have to sort of start from scratch and getting fast enough to make the jump or whatever
it is. I think all three of those games share that quality. They all have that momentum.
That's true. That's actually a very good point. It's
Dan
like a therapy
momentum.
Session. But what's specifically spectacular about Mirror's Edge is playing it a second time. And I urge anyone who somewhat enjoyed playing it the first time through, because the second time, it's way easier because you've done it before, even if you haven't played in a while. And you also get to capitalize on what's so great about that game, and sort of know when you kind of know what to do and you can really finesse and enjoy that momentum.
It makes you look like when you ever go to those E3 demos where they're playing the game and you're like, I'm never going to play the game this well.
Yeah.
When you play the game over and over again, you kind of get to that point, I think.
Totally.
Especially like with a game like Mirror's Edge, because it's so precise, which I mean, I've gone on record to say I didn't really like that game, but I focused a little too much, I think, on the combat, which is something you can completely avoid.
You can't completely avoid it.
I thought you could.
Are certain areas where you pretty much have to
deal with areas where you have to deal with guys, but it's 10% of the game.
Yeah.
You know? So,
and it would be great if you could completely avoid it.
Yes.
And it's interesting that...
And sequel, you will. They literally said they're going to address all the pacing and combat. I mean, they literally, I can't wait. I hope, I'm so glad that that's happening. And
has
it's interesting.
I thought, yeah. I thought they said that that was not going through.
No, it is. One of the guy runs the, literally, there's an article from a year ago and literally like the last couple weeks or week.
Oh, Riccatello?
Perhaps. Yes.
That guy.
You guys know. I don't know. You guys know. But he said that they are is in development and they are addressing all those concerns.
Well,
and,
I hope so, because for me, Mirror's, it's funny you say you feel this sense of like euphoria or whatever playing Mirror's Edge. For me, it was the complete opposite. Hmm. For me, it was, I don't know, like I picked it up and I was like, okay, everyone's kind of saying this is, and I like the concept of it, like first person, like sort of not a shooting game. Like I like the idea of something different. But for me, it's like I played the tutorial level and I died like 100 times. And like I was like, am I doing the right thing? And it's like I could see where it was close.
Short answer is no, you were not doing the right thing.
No, obviously, because I was dying all the time. But it's like, it's giving you sort of vague instructions. And I could see how it's like, if someone knew what they were doing, that's what I was saying, playing a second time, I could see how once you actually figure out how to really command the control scheme, how it could be really cool. But for me, the barrier to get into it is like, I felt like I just needed a little more hand-holding at the beginning just to kind of ease me in. I felt they didn't layer the build of all the moves in a good enough pace to really get comfortable with it. And that, for me, made me put it down.
It's interesting that there aren't very many games. I thought there would be a lot of games that would pick up on that mechanic and put it to use. I mean, we have Brink, obviously. Yeah. But
Prey 2.
Oh, right.
That's why I picked it up, because I love Prey 2 at E3. So.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how Prey 2 actually works. I mean, we only saw someone else playing it. So
true.
But I didn't think Brink felt like that. In fact, I didn't end up using that mechanic in Brink as much as I thought I would going in, because it just didn't really end up helping, and it wasn't any kind of flow to it, as you're talking about.
I agree. I tried to do it that way. I even made in Brink, I made a like skinny, slim, fast runner guy, but he wasn't useful.
In a multiplayer shooter, though, it seems more like more of a hindrance than anything else. When you're trying to run up walls and a guy's just, all right, and he just shoot you in the back with a shotgun.
Well, like that's a lot of that is in the Uncharted beta, right?
What do you mean?
Traversal. And that is like scurrying
absolutely.
Up things and getting. I found getting high ground in that game to be very important. But and
if you can get up there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm definitely one of the people who actually survives a lot of those rounds. How are you? You're playing the right game right now.
I downloaded the Uncharted 3 beta. I've been on tour for a couple weeks, so I only got to play for like an hour or two before I had to leave.
But, and it ends today, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of upset. But it doesn't matter. Uncharted 3, it's all about the single player in that game. I really could care less about the multiplayer. I tried it out. I thought it was okay. You know, the co-op mode I hated. The one with the – you have the two guy – you play 2-on-2, but one team is full of AI and the other team isn't. I didn't understand the point of that. It would have been better if they put the four of you together against the AI. Like make it like a horde mode. Why not? You know, like that's where the fun in doing that kind of stuff is. Like, I don't feel like playing against two humans plus a whole bunch of AI. It's just like the guys who are not on the AI side. I mean, you're pretty much borked from the beginning, like before you've done anything.
It's interesting to me that you're uninterested in the multiplayer side, because I think that the beta is kind of proving to a lot of people that the multiplayer should be noticed in this franchise.
A decent job, but you know, I'm a hardcore Call of Duty guy, and like my online multiplayer stuff is FPS primarily. Although the Assassin's Creed multiplayer, amazing.
Yeah. Agreed,
because it's totally different, and I think that's like to me playing.
Well, then you just criticized the Uncharted beta for trying to do something different,
but it's still a shooter.
Yeah, but they have a lot of different modes that do a lot of different things. I mean, there's Plunder is sort of a CTF ripoff.
Yeah, CTF kind or of. Sabotage mode, search and destroy modes and stuff like that, like camouflage with treasure.
Aside from that, though, I think the thing that's so exciting about the multiplayer in Uncharted is you guys mentioned the traversal and the way it's integrated single player ideas in multiplayer, which is it's the first time I've ever played that. We're jumping from truck to truck. While the
I just threw a pencil from truck to truck.
Audio listeners, it was very exciting. That was such. I love the idea of an interactive battleground. It's like the that scene in Flash Gordon when they're fighting And then spikes come out on the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, wow, why is it taking that long? And I don't mean interactive battleground the way we see it in a fighting game where, like, oh, there's people cheering in the background, then you fall through the floor, and now you're in a new... Like Uncharted, like, you literally like, have to, like, do that platformy stuff while you're shooting, not AI, other players.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cool.
And you're in the trucks, and the airplanes are there, which is something really cool. Have you guys played the newest levels in that at all?
Probably not. What are the newest levels?
Yemen, there's a level that has really big... There's two towers, and it's in the middle of a town that's sort of really high up off the ground. And it doesn't really have an interactive element like Chateau or Airport did. Chateau is the level where the building starts to burn down halfway through. That stuff I think is really exciting. The problem, because I just wrote a story about this on Shaq about the beta, and the thing that I have a kind of a problem with is like I think it's really exciting the first couple times you play that airport stuff, but then like your 30th or 40th time, I'm just like,
you've seen it.
It's the same thing over and over again.
You're sort of waiting for it to get to the actual part where you play.
Yes, because that, you know, and that's sort of, you know, I like the airport thing and I think it's totally cool, but I don't like how it stops and then there's a cutscene and then you get in trucks somehow. Like, how was I in a plane and now I'm in a truck? You know, like,
there were trucks in the back of the plane.
They just like parachuted right out, I guess, right onto the tarmac.
You just described scenes from James Bond movies, and that's exactly what happens. Trucks parachute out of planes, and it's awesome.
I suppose. I guess that's probably part of the lore. It's going to come out in an Uncharted book that I'm not aware of, a multiplayer-based book that I've
you have to
read with your friends, apparently.
Chapter 6, I died again this morning. Woke up.
Respawn. So, I mean, that part of it is really cool. But the thing that I find interesting, too, is before we were actually recording the show, you were talking about how you are not you don't care about the single player in like a Call of Duty, or you
it's not that I don't
the multiplayer.
Care,
you prefer the multiplayer.
The multiplayer is what makes me love the game.
But then you dismissed Uncharted.
It's not so much dismissed. Okay, first of all, I mean, I give them credit for trying to do something innovative because lots of people.
Oh, there's faint praise if I've ever heard it.
Well, no, because
they tried.
It's true. They are trying, and you can see because they're expanding on the ideas that they tried in Uncharted 2, right? The thing is, like, that single player story is so amazing. Even with the stupid goblins at the end of the zombies at the end of the first game, and the blue dude at the boss final boss, which is terrible in Uncharted 2, but that's sort of their shtick. But the rest of the story and the character acting and the voice work is so good.
Agreed.
I'm completely fulfilled with that. I don't need sort of a third person shooter.
But if the third person shooter is good,
I'd rather see co-op. It's a game with character. Well, or even if it's separate.
Well,
they separated
out. That's in there as well. Yeah,
yeah, but not the way there's sort of still like I would actually like to see a co-op story mode almost.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of missions, but I do get what you're saying.
You know, what, along those lines, obviously, like if they didn't give it all together, it wouldn't prevent me from buying Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
The single player is what makes me buy that game day one and love every second of what I'm doing.
Are you at all worried then that the fact that they focus on multiplayer may affect the single player?
No, people rant on that on the internet. Come on, let's be real here. These are huge, big games. Naughty Dog's already done two. I mean, there's a lack of new IP. This is a new IP that is amazing. It shows that if you take the time and you commit to the idea, you can successfully do new IP and get a huge fan base. And it was funny because I think on last week's show, Andrew Renee was talking about, look at all these top 20 games, all these big selling games. They're all sequels. There's no, quote, new IP. But Assassin's Creed is way up on that list. That is a new IP. People forget.
For this generation.
No, but people forget. Well, I mean, it's on the current generation of consoles. It only came out on then, right? Yeah. Yes, there's been...
It's also the fourth game in the series.
But they've had him every year. Yeah, they've gone Call of Duty move. But technically speaking, we're not talking about Super Mario Brothers.
Right.
You know, we're not talking about Call of Duty that was on generations ago, go. Like, this, it still can work. And those guys, you know, give Ubisoft credit for sticking to their guns. You know, the first Assassin's Creed, I loved it personally. Yes, there was a lot of repetitiveness. But look, it was a great idea. They stuck to it.
Well, they stuck to it because it sold like gangbusters.
Well, it did sell like gangbusters, yes. And everything, money drives everything. But, I mean, at least they committed to the idea. They did pump in a ton of money. They marketed the hell out of it to make sure that it was successful. And look where that's gone now.
Right.
You talk to most people, and a lot of journalists, too, that were hating on Assassin's Creed. now love Assassin's Creed.
Well, I didn't like the first game, and I liked the second one, and that's because I thought the first game wasn't very good.
Well, you could see what they fixed, right? They fixed a lot of the issues that a lot of people had problems with.
Right.
So, but I mean, the thing is, often these franchises, they need two or three iterations to work out some of those kinks, especially, I mean, the biggest thing is the core idea was really strong.
I just don't understand the sentiment that because Uncharted does a great single-player campaign that they shouldn't try to do a great multiplayer component as well.
I don't think I'm saying they shouldn't. I for me personally, they haven't yet.
I think, well, okay, that's fine.
But I'll still try it.
I think a lot of people are being impressed with at least what this beta is showing. And even 2 had a really strong multiplayer component that was a lot of fun, and it was different from what you get in a lot of kind of cookie-cutter FPS multiplayer modes where it's just deathmatch and team deathmatch and capture the flag, et cetera, et cetera. And it had those same principles in place, but it provided a different enough experience, I think, that it found its own, you know, raison d'etre, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Uncharted 2, I was one of those people who was initially worried about the fact that it was going to have this multiplayer component that Naughty Dog was creating, but after playing it, I actually prefer it to a game like Call of Duty. I like Call of Duty. I mean, when those games come out, I tend to play them religiously for 2 or 3 weeks and then put them on a shelf and forget that I own them.
Renounce your religion.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So, but the thing with Uncharted 2, when that came out, I kept going back to it because I felt like I was able to be competitive in that game versus like a Modern Warfare where it's like, you know, everyone kind of knows the like all of the very, you know, minute little things of like, you know, this does this X amount of damage and everyone knows sort of the nooks and crannies and everything. It feels like a more explorable world. I mean, in Modern Warfare, you sort of know to get to point A to B, you have like two ways to do it. Uncharted, you can go up, you can go down, you can go around. You have all these different ways to traverse the environment that it's a game of skill, but it's also a game of strategy.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't really feel the same way about a game like Modern Warfare that way.
I think probably a very high-level Modern Warfare player would disagree with you.
Oh, absolutely. I will disagree.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty, you know, I got like a 1.4 kill-death ratio in Modern Warfare 2.
All right, you don't have to whip it out here. I'm just saying.
Well, no, because I want to speak to this because I consider, I concede there are people that are even way beyond me, but I feel like I can hold my own in like a top-tier match, and there is a lot of skill into it. I mean, because,
well, no one doubts the skill. We were talking strategy.
Well, yeah, it really
which is
depends.
Different than tactics.
I agree. There, it depends really on how you're playing the game. And the thing is, like, if you're playing with a clan or, you know, with friends, and you are coordinated, you can do some serious damage to like an uncoordinated team in those games, even in a deathmatch game.
Certainly,
the problem that I have with
what
that,
you
though,
just said makes me never want to play Modern Warfare.
That's exactly
that's what I'm up against.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, with Uncharted, I never feel that way that I'm gonna get into a match and get completely decimated. Whereas if I play Call of Duty now after not playing it for weeks or months, I'm not going to have fun because I'm going to get destroyed, and that's not really fun for me.
Does that speak more to the idea that an Uncharted, and not to pick on Uncharted, but a game that hasn't kind of broken into that top tier of the 1, 2, or 3 games that everybody's playing, that you can sort of live under the radar a little bit, and the best of the best of the best players are in these other games, and you can sort of come into a multiplayer experience that's still fun but is maybe not quite there for the elite players?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the guys who are in love with Call of Duty are going to put it down to play Uncharted multiplayer, if sort of that's where you're going with it. The thing that I like about Uncharted, and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood did this really well too, is like you're not just playing deathmatch or team deathmatch. There are so many other things that are happening. You know, Uncharted's multiplayer with the team objective stuff, when you have to, like, it switches, like Killzone 3.
I was just gonna say, this is what Killzone
did, that where it switches the objectives.
Well,
I love
those game modes.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff, that creativity is great. I mean, then Assassin's Creed, completely creative.
Well, it's hide and seek, basically.
I absolutely,
but it's awesome.
I love that Assassin's Creed multiplayer, but what I'm realizing, I love that for the same reason why I love the fun gambling modes in Modern Warfare and this Uncharted 3 beta, and that I really feel all the unique multiplayer modes really remind me of playing games with my friends when I was a little kid, you know, because it is like hide and seek. And when you have these objectives, I mean, I used to, maybe I was a different kind of kid, I used to like act out.
You
used
to kill your
friends.
Yeah. With exact duplicates of them walking around.
No, but they all feel like, it feels like when you're playing Tag or Home Free, right? The Ali Ali Oxen Free used to play, you know? Or like TV. Like it feels like that kind, like that communal with your buddies. But you, I mean, when I played Tag when I was a kid, I felt I wanted to be a cop and a robber and an army guy and what, you know, I wanted to be an action hero. And these game modes really make me feel that way. But straight up multiplayer just feels like competition shooting, you know? So those unique game modes, a special kind of feeling, I think.
Just to speak to that really quickly, I think that, you know, a game like Halo 3, I think when it came out, it had Forge, and people were creating these meta games within the game. They created their own modes, and there were rules everyone had to abide by. And then when the game went to the next iteration, I'm probably getting the numbers of the games incorrect, but those things were implemented into the game because it allowed the community was creating stuff that the publisher and the developer really appreciated, so they gave them those ideas. And I think that's what Assassin's Creed does. And, you know, Uncharted, it kind of takes these, you know, it takes away from the vanilla part of, I think, what multiplayer kind of is. I mean, I think I just this week wrote, like, typical team deathmatch. Like, that's what you expect. But when these games do something else, that's when I get interested in it, and that's what I like about it. Andy, anything else you were talking? You were talking about Black Ops. You have it on your list here.
Well, I had it on my list because I mean, being a big Call of Duty, I know, sure, lots of people hate on the Call of Duties, but
who hates on it?
I actually just made me think of an interesting thing because I think there is a bit of a disconnect between games journalists or media enthusiast media and getting or really understanding why Call of Duty is what it is. You know, they always and there seems to be this overwhelming like sort of want for Battlefield to destroy Call of Duty too, you know. And
it seems a little tinfoil hat to me, but I mean
a little bit. I don't know. It's just impression from the outside, right? Like looking into it. But I mean, the biggest thing is, and I put it down because for me, like Call of Duty really is about multiplayer, single player, and that's why like the E3 coverage of these games really didn't interest me at all because it's not what I care about. I'll play it.
If that was the case, wouldn't Battlefield already be trouncing Call of Duty? Or is it just,
not
are you saying that the multiplayer is superior to Battlefield? Because Battlefield sort of made its hay on...
But it's a PC. It made its hay... Battlefield proper made its hay on PC, mm-hmm. right? Battlefield proper is not a console game yet. And like for people...
Bad Company. I mean,
Bad Company was interesting. But you know what? There's certain things. I played Bad Company. I played Bad Company 2. I liked it. Mm-hmm. Would I pick it over Call of Duty? If I sat down and said I'm going to play Modern Warfare or Bad Company, Modern Warfare in a heartbeat.
Isn't that just personal preference?
Controls are tighter.
Really?
More customization to your classes. Like, the things I want. Because the way I play is not going to be the way that the designers preset five guys that mm-hmm. I have to pick from. Like, that's the one thing, like, really with the first Modern Warfare that they really hit on was doing the class customization and the carrots to make you play. And this is what's wrong, in my opinion, with Black Ops. The Black Ops multiplayer, they gave with the money system, you know, mm-hmm. CP points, I stopped playing. I've max prestiged Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, max prestige in World of War, max prestige on Modern Warfare 2. I haven't even reached the first level cap in Black Ops.
Why is that?
And that's for two reasons. One, I felt like I got everything that I wanted halfway through the level progression. I got to about level 40 and I was like, I've already unlocked the guns that I want. I just earned money, so I buy, like, there's no reward for doing crazy stuff in the game. Like, oh, yeah, I double headshotted with one bullet. I don't get anything fancy for it. I just get a bunch of money to buy whatever I want, and I can have the cool-looking face paint or, you know, camo on my gun or whatever at level 15.
So it sounds like you're saying that it became a little more accessible to a more general audience.
They took away the dangling carrot.
Okay.
You're saying lock away more stuff.
Not lock away more stuff, but make rewards for doing high-level things or crazy things, make those unique and not attainable by the general populace.
Hmm. It's interesting that you have this perspective on, like, media enthusiasts or journalists not interested in what the real purpose, what you feel the real purpose of the Modern Warfare game is the multiplayer. Because it's very interesting because what you're speaking of sounds to me like a very niche the elite community.
Yeah,
like it sounds
granted,
like
granted,
you know.
Yes.
So I feel like that's actually the. It's interesting that
but,
I never even think about
that niche
world.
Community. I mean, look at that's still like could be a million players.
Yeah, but I would think.
But
that,
you're talking about a game that sold, I think, what eight, twelve.
But
or
if you go down, you go down the list of multiplayer games, and you go, okay, 2 years into your game, you're still going to have between PC, Xbox, and PS3, you're still going to have like a million people online every day. I think any game company would be like jumping at the bit to get a franchise that's doing that.
What I'm curious is, I feel like I wonder. I ask you, is there any joy in retaining that niche? You know, is there any joy in like people like bands? You know, like they liked it before they got big, and they like keeping it. Like, is there any joy in you guys loved that game mode that way, and you can still play that game mode, and you don't want all of us to be in on that?
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back to this because obviously this is a big conversation. Andy's starting to stand up. I think he's getting a little amped up. And later on, we actually have a track from Mr. Andy Reid and Yug. You want to tell us a little bit? Is this a brand new track?
It's my latest single. It's called Vivacious, and it's out now. You can get it at Beatport or hit my label website, 44thandfilth.com.
Cool. That's going to be later on the show when we return.
We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from We Can Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
Welcome back to We Can Confirm, the official podcast of ShackNews.com. We were talking about Black Ops, and Andy was starting to throw some punches.
Not throw punches. I think you know, being not in the media side of the business, but being a huge enthusiast, I think it's just a different perspective.
Well, you were saying before the show started that you thought that the media doesn't typically play competitive multiplayer.
It's not typically. I think it was more that there you have very few guys that are hardcore multiplayer guys, and especially a lot of the talk is over Call of Duty always because it's the big thing. It's the number one game, right? So everyone's got an opinion on it one way or the other. But it's I listen to a lot of the gaming podcasts across the web, and there's sort of I've just noticed over the last few months, especially this year with Battlefield 3 coming to the equation, just a lot of people talking like just even off the cuff remarks. Oh, well, I play the single player. I don't really like them because I'm not very good. Oh, I just get in and I get my ass kicked every 2 seconds. I just die all the time. You know?
You're quoting me, and I'll cop to that completely. I mean, that is my position, but I don't think that invalidates a discussion of that game.
I'm not saying it invalidates it at all. I'm just trying to bring the other side of the argument, right? Like, right. I think there's a lack of the voice of the hardcore, what? You know, like,
maybe
the point that you die all the time is because you're not as good as me because I put in the time to build my skills up.
How many games have you played this year? You know, you play Battlefield, you play Modern Warfare 4 times a week. You know, I play 52 games a year.
Yeah, and that's the nature of the job, right?
Like, it's unfortunate, and I would love to be able to specialize, and I would love to, it killed me when StarCraft came out, and I literally didn't have, StarCraft 2, I mean, I literally didn't have the time to get as good at StarCraft 2 as I got at StarCraft 1. Because that's a game I adore. I could just buy that this year and have been fine.
And I could see how that'd be very frustrating. Like,
I'm not complaining.
No, there's obviously there's tremendous pros to what you do.
Right.
But some of the cons are, I can't focus in on one game and really get awesome at it.
And what I'm trying to get around to is that I don't think it's a problem that's endemic with games journalists, quote unquote, or media or whatever. I think that it is. The fact that there are – and maybe you're finding this voice is missing in what we're talking about, and that's valid. But I think it's more endemic to the idea that it needs to serve multiple audiences, these games. It needs to serve –
Well, isn't that why they do put a single-player campaign in the games?
Exactly. And I think even the multiplayer needs to cater to a more casual audience if they're going to sell – X million.
But that's what they're trying to do with Spec Ops, right? Like, that was the whole vibe, is doing more of the co-op against the AI as a multiplayer guise to mm-hmm. give something that's a little more structured and not necessarily just unfair,
right?
Because I'm not as good. Now, part of the problem is matchmaking isn't where it needs to be. Like, to your point, like,
I agree with that.
I jump in, I get wasted all the time because I'm not very good. Yeah, because you're getting put in against level, 50 players, and you're level one. You haven't even unlocked the ability to customize your classes yet to the way you like to play.
Right.
So, I think there's definitely room for improvement. I'm not saying that the systems are perfect by no means, because they aren't.
Yeah.
But to me, and it's not to say, oh, yeah, everyone in games journalism hates competitive multiplayer. That's not what I was saying at all. All I'm saying is just I've noticed a trend in the voices that are out there in the industry as a whole leaning towards, well, I don't really play the multiplayer. I play single player. Everything's single player, single player, single player. From the people are talking it. And they don't often get people who are on the other side hardcore, enthusiasts of multiplayer to say, okay,
that's why we invited you here.
Yeah, that's why I'm allowed to talk. This is why it's good. This is what I look at. These are the things that are important to me.
Right.
And like all the controversy over Call of Duty Elite.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see what happens when that actually releases. The beta just started. And also, I think that there might be a problem with... I think the issue for me is you're talking about Call of Duty, and you're like, I played Battlefield, and it was sort of not your cup of tea, but I think that there's a... On the other side of the fence, we don't want to get into a situation where we're sort of having to have these battles with apologists at the same time.
Yeah, fair enough.
Or loyalists, you know what I mean? Or cultists.
Well, you're gonna get that, right? No matter what. Like, exactly. When anything becomes that popular, you're going to have people who are staunch defenders of it and people who will do everything in their power to bring it down.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, there's lots of me. Like, I love playing all kinds of games. I'm not just a FPS guy, but I am a hardcore Call of Duty player, but I also play racing sims, I play RPGs, I play action games.
Now you're starting to sound way too much like Garnet Lee.
Well, someone's got to fill in his shoes, right? Like,
Jeff and Dan, you guys, your latest episode of TRS, I guess today's episode is your Harry Potter review, but yesterday you guys played Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, we full disclosure, we're sponsored by Wizards of the Coast for Magic the Gathering. So take this.
You mean on TRS?
On TRS, yeah. Not the show, right. But, I should disclose that. And because of that, we were sent to the new 2012 cards are being released on the 15th, I believe. Is that... happened already?
That's today.
That's today. Timely. This show is never timely.
And so anyway, we went to this pre-release party and played the new cards. And I played some casual Magic, as had Dan. But I think both of us came away from that tournament really jazzed about the new decks and getting really back into playing Magic. And
we had also played the Xbox Live
right
of the last year's...
Yeah, Duels of the Planeswalkers.
Exactly.
2011.
Exactly.
And 2012 came out just recently, and I have it on Steam. I've been playing it on Steam. And honestly, the game that I played most this week, not a lot to talk about, unfortunately. I have a lot to say about it. Played a lot of it. Can't talk about it. But I can talk about...
Thanks for bringing that up.
We'll talk about it next week, unfortunately.
One of the cons of the industry.
Yeah, exactly.
But I came away from that tournament and came home and turned on Duels of Planeswalkers 2012 on Steam and have been playing the crap out of it. So back in, so hooked on Magic. The digital version of those games is really well done. I mean, I have some minor gripes with it, but it first of all, if you've never played Magic, it's a great way to learn because it handles all the rule stuff for you and all the information is laid out in a really accessible way. Every time... a new card comes out, you can zoom in on it, obviously read what's on the card, but then there's a more info button right. that breaks down, and it has, I think, really well-designed tooltips that each facet of the card is broken into a separate screen of tooltip. Mm-hmm. So like if this monster, it's a creature, and it has trample. And so that each of those things is his own thing that you read. So it doesn't feel like, oh, this one card, I need to figure out how this card works. It breaks it down so you understand the structure.
So it's like
of
a
Magic.
Learning tool a little bit.
Well, it can be used that way.
Okay.
It's because I think I know that I was a little intimidated by playing Magic at this tournament. We had to go because, as I said, we were sponsored to go. But I probably wouldn't have gone were we not, because I was intimidated by that environment because I figured everybody knows more than – it's very similar to this Call of Duty idea, right?
Yeah.
Is that everybody knows more than me. I'm just going to get trounced, which I did get trounced, but it was fun. And I will look like an idiot because I don't know what's going on. A, the people were super cool in the real life people. But B, it's using the digital version is a great way to sort of break the ice of the pure mechanics of Magic. Now,
and by the way, too, let me just interject and say that we play a lot of board games. Magic is a fairly simple game. It seems very intimidating, but as far as games like that go, it's fairly easy to understand. It's very basic in what it's way easier to play than Dungeons and Dragons. You know, there's a lot less going on in it than you would think.
That's true. And as each new card adds a new wrinkle, they're all adding wrinkles to what is a very, as you say, simple core set of rules. And it's easy to get overwhelmed with, looking at this card, it's got like 1,000 things on it. And I don't get it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you get the pure mechanics first, then adding that stuff on is much easier.
I don't want to sound like ignorant to it because I don't really know anything about Magic. It is a collectible card game. So are there like, do you go out and buy packs and like everyone has different cards, or how does that work exactly?
You'll build a deck based on, you know, the cards that you buy. And so there's a lot of people are intimidated by the sinkhole of money, as am I,
right?
That you can sort of start going down trying to chase cards for your deck. And there's five different mana types. So there's basically five different, you know, it's like red, green, white, you know, the five colors. And so you're going to constitute your deck with between one to three of those colors, depending on the cards that you've got. Mm-hmm. The great thing about the video game version is it handles all that stuff for you. You can delve deeper because it has a deck manager, so you can trick out your deck the way you want. But for somebody like me who I was playing with starter decks and just didn't get it, didn't understand how to constitute a deck until we did that tournament.
Right.
The digital version handles all that really easily. You start with like three decks to choose from. After you go through the campaign, you beat different bad guys. Mm-hmm. I guess they call them planeswalkers because that's who you're dueling with. But as you beat each of them, you unlock the deck that you just played against, which is a really great mechanic for the video game version because you just watched this guy pull some awesome combos on you. So you know, you get a sense of how those decks are meant to be played because you just watched a guy do it to you.
Right.
And it's challenging, man. I would lose to guys 6, 7, 8 times. Which brings me to my one of a few criticisms. And that is, and I kind of brought this up a little bit in the earlier conversation, there's a difference between strategy and tactics.
Yes.
Right? Strategy is something you can form long term. Tactics are what you're dealing with right in front of you. I feel like Magic is a brilliantly wonderful tactics game. But I don't understand, and maybe in talkbacks, more experienced Magic players can give me the lowdown. I don't understand how it can be a strategy game. It relies so much on luck, so much on what cards I'm pulling at a given time. I would play the digital version, which I have been playing a crap ton of. I would play the same guy 6, 7, 8 times, and literally the luck of the draw would be the determining factor, or that's what it seemed to me. Because I would play my cards to what I thought were the best of my ability, and I would still get beat, but then I would draw just the right order of cards in a certain match, and he wouldn't draw a card that he kept beating me with, and I would win.
Well, so I want to ask you, Jeff, because I always felt that way about Magic before we went to this tournament.
Yeah.
I had so much more fun playing at this tournament than I did in playing the Xbox Live version of Magic or in games we'd play with each other just using starter decks, because we had to constitute our deck ourselves. So we had to build. So yes, it is luck what mm-hmm. you pull, but you actually are factoring that in your strategy when you make your deck, because you need a certain amount of land, which is kind of like your mana mm-hmm. in the game. You put the amount of land you put in the game versus the amount of cool cards you can pull. So you make those choices yourself. You're like making your own game mechanic in the game, making your own gameplay style. So that to me was where strategy came into play. It's like, yes, it's luck what I pull, but I'm kind of trying to incite. I'm trying to manufacture the kind of luck I will have.
Right.
Now, my question to you is, And that was why I had more fun, because I felt like it was my choice. I wasn't just slave to whatever the game was doing.
Right.
I would think that on the one hand, the video game version eliminates that stuff and would make it more.
You can make your own decks in the video game.
But video game version would eliminate the thing that you brought up, the sinkhole that you brought up earlier, where if I'm playing against another person, I don't know if I lost out of skill or I lost because I just didn't buy. He's spent more money in getting more cards. Like, it's on an even playing field. And I feel like that's the joy of the video game version, is there's an even playing field, I would assume.
Not only that, but you will get the cards that you will never get. You will be able to play with the uber badass, incredible, you know, I can't remember.
Oh, in the digital
legendary
version.
Version. Yeah, because you can unlock, because beating guys unlocks those cards. You just unlock those cards. And I think there's even a button where you can pay to unlock. but
it
sounds
like it's less fun because you aren't, well, I guess you are constituting your deck, but
I think that either way, yes, there's a strategy in how you compose your deck. Yes, there's that strategy. But moment to moment, like, I can say, oh, I'm going to put this card in there and that card in there because they complement each other. But if those cards never come up, I have no control over that.
Yeah.
And well,
what is poker to you? Is there not strategy in poker?
Well, poker is completely different because you're not playing the cards, you're playing the person. You know, there's no bluffing in Magic. I mean, there's a little, but if a guy pulls a card on, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So I know we're talking about Magic, and people are probably like, "I don't want to talk about Magic," but it is a video game, and it is a really excellent video game. There's a couple of things that are annoying with the digital version, in that the it'll pull up a tooltip that says, "Okay, you can select, you know, four cards." You just did a card that where you need to select four cards, right, from your hand, and it'll say "Okay" at the bottom of that. And if you hit "Okay" instead of selecting your cards first, it just assumes you didn't want to select any cards.
Really?
Which got me a couple times. I'm like, no, there's no reason why I would have done this card if I didn't want to select any of my cards. I'm just clicking OK so this tooltip goes away.
Which is a digital thing that could not happen
would
in real
never
life.
Happen in real life, because you'd be like, hey, dude, I'm doing this.
You're like, guy's not, yeah. OK, you've lost your turn.
And the robot I'm playing against is, no, you said OK. I'm like, damn you. Anyway, it's fun, and it's a great video game and a great introduction to tabletop.
I'm interested in checking it out. I was telling you guys outside that I'm a little intimidated by it. It sounds like that you guys were too, so
absolutely
plainly said that, so it doesn't sound like it. And I do want to check it out. So it's out on Steam, on Xbox Live. Is it out on PSN as well?
I don't know.
Yes, I thought there was one that was free on PlayStation Plus.
Because you did the PlayStation Fun thing that they did for us.
That's why it was free.
Do you pay for PlayStation Plus?
I got in on the Welcome Back.
Yeah.
Screwed up. Oh,
okay.
Here,
so it's free under that.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
It was on PSN Plus. I saw it free to download it.
And if not, you can download a trial, see how you like it.
I think there is so much baggage associated with Magic, which is why probably people are like, I don't want you guys to talk about that.
Right.
But it is a brilliant strategy game. I mean, brilliant tactics game. It's super addictive and fun, and this is a way to do it for relatively cheap, and I think people could probably enjoy it if they give it a chance.
Cool. So in the Shaq News thread, I think it was Shaq News, there was one particular gentleman keeps asking why no one has talked about Alice Madness Returns, the sequel to American McGee's cult hit Alice.
Probably because nobody played it yet.
No one played it yet, but I went out and played it. I played it on PC, and you know, it's going to be kind of weird to talk about this. I've never wanted to watch a game more and not have to play it than Alice. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that the game is bad, the gameplay itself. The world is so amazing, and it's dark, and there's parts of it where it's just wonderful and it's very lighthearted, and then it turns really dark very quickly, and it has this very yin and yang thing that's really, it's really interesting. But the gameplay itself is very floaty. Like, when you press forward to walk, it's like, I don't feel like I'm controlling Alice. I feel like I'm controlling wind that's pushing her.
Sounds exactly like the first game.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I was talking to Ludwig Kietzmann at Joystick about this, and he's playing the game as well. And he says that the same exact thing. The environment really captures him, and the story is kind of something that's keeping him afloat in terms of playing the game. But the gameplay is sort of becoming the hindrance. The thing that really bothers me about it, I don't know if you guys have played it. I know you played it at a press event.
Yeah.
Okay. The thing that bothers me about it is, like, all the most interesting stuff about it, like, you can double jump and then you can press a button to teleport and she turns into a big puff of butterflies, mm-hmm. and you get all these really cool powers. You start the game with them, and all of the progression in the game is the weapons. And like the most, the worst part about the, not the worst, but like the one part of
least
the game.
Interesting.
The least interesting part of the game is the combat.
Yeah.
And all of the progression in the game is based around that combat.
And it relies heavily on that. Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
As a design exercise, and that's how the first game was as well, as a design exercise, fascinating.
Yeah.
But in service of what?
I feel like that was a game that the, you know, the design document was, you know, 100 pages of this is how great the world is going to look. And the last two pages were like, by the way, this is how the game's going to play. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like there's more passion put into the creation of the art and the world rather than focusing on making sure that the gameplay aspect of it is as solid as, you know, other games of the same ilk, you know?
Well, yeah. And they sort of rely on tried and true third person action game tropes where the, I think the design and the whimsy of the world, even dark whimsy, kind of clamors for something more interesting than that, mm-hmm. than just sort of stabbing a thing and throwing your knife at a thing. And, you know, it would be great if that matched the vision gameplay-wise matched the vision design-wise.
It feels like, for me, there's not a lot of passion in that gameplay. And I don't want to put it aside because I just like the world. I really wish there was an option in the game to just watch it in demo mode, because I'd like to see everything that's associated with it, because it's so crazy and interesting. But just playing it is becoming sort of a chore. I mean, it's sort of a very mediocre game. And the first game, I think a lot of people would say that there was probably a lot of the aspects from this game that are very similar mm-hmm. to that first game. But again, it was the world, because it was so fascinating. And It's strange that when you pre-ordered this game, it came with the original game, because it's sort of like they gave away the original and then this was the HD upgrade. You see what I'm saying? Like, it sort of has that same...
I think there's more different than that.
Yeah, but I know. But yeah. I mean, like, to me and someone... And I'm only a few hours into the game, so I can't really speak to the entire experience. And I hope that the upgrade, the progression system, doesn't just rely on the weapons, but based on the menus, all of the upgrade stuff is just based on weaponry. So.
That's to me is disappointing, because actually I was really intrigued by the look of that game,
and it's beautiful.
For me now, though, loose bad controls are inexcusable in this day and age. Inexcusable. If you have crappy controls, forget it. You're not worth my time. There's too many other amazing games that are tight.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's like a game like Super Meat Boy, why it was so awesome.
Yeah.
The tightest.
A game that needs to be super precise.
Tight. But
like N+.
Think if that was a little bit off Super Meat Boy.
N+. Let's talk about that.
You would say that it's floaty. It's intentionally
exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
That doesn't make me happy. intentionally. Oh, well, then no, I can handle that.
But that's the same criticism for Little Big Planet, right? Which I never got.
But Little Big Planet and N+ is like, you know, Care Bear versus Grizzly
No, but
Bear.
But it's the intention, the intentionalness
right?
of doing a physic or a floaty.
I mean,
kind
that floatiness.
Scheme, right?
I mean, the floatiness in Alice is not intentional. I don't know. I mean, it has.
Does it feel like it's supposed to be that
maybe
way?
You're
or
supposed
does it feel
to be
like
the
it's
wind.
Just not as good as
maybe
it
you
could
are
be?
The wind.
Maybe I am the wind. Like, maybe this is a flower sequel. I'm not aware of.
Missed the cutscene.
Apparently, I must have skipped it. The thing is like, when I'm playing the game, you talked about this last week, Jeff, you know, the tactile, like, or weightlessness of certain things, or like when you're hitting something in a game,
yes.
you don't feel like you're making contact.
Yes.
This is what the game feels like.
Man, I wish I could talk about the game that I have actually been playing, because it nails all that stuff.
All right, well.
I'm going to listen for next week
next
to know
week.
What this
next
is.
Next week, I can't wait for it. What I do want to talk about is a game that I finally got to play. Speaking to what Andy was saying earlier about games journalists not being able to play games that they want to play.
Or want to.
Or, yeah. Something that I bought when it came out, finally got to play it, thanks to Twitter, is Dead Space 2.
Thank you, Twitter.
I wrote on Twitter, I told people all the games that I had in my collection that I hadn't yet to play, and everyone voted for me to play Dead Space 2. I sat down and played the first 7 chapters of that game in one sitting, which I think was like 4.5 hours. I was like, I'll sit down for 20 minutes and see what it's all about. 4 hours later, I was like, why is it dark outside?
Wow.
And in California, it gets dark really late. it's not like Toronto darkness.
Yeah.
You guys have both. Daniel, I know you played it. Jeff, did you play it?
A little.
Dead Space 2?
I mean, I played a fair amount.
You don't sound too enthused by it.
I don't want to talk about this. You guys go ahead. There's no reason for me to poop on it, because
I'm in the Jeff Canada camp here.
I agree. It's a good game. It's a good game. It's just not for me.
Well, Dan, what did you think about Dead Space 2?
I really liked it. The only thing that
I was bummed about was that I didn't experience that much of the zero-G stuff.
Which, they changed it a lot in this game, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't play the first one. I watched someone play a little bit of the first one, and it was always like, oh, I would love to play that, where you're like zooming around in the people on the ceilings, and you're on the, you know, like all that stuff. So I was bummed about that, and I also did not find it to be terribly scary.
It's really not.
So, which I like that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't handle the fear.
It's more of an action game than a horror game.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. I love the weapons.
They're so awesome.
The only thing is that I'm trying to remember if I sort of – you kind of clock into the one thing that you like, and then there's other awesome things that are happening, but I've already leveled up the thing that I like. Right. So why – it's like it's so scary to – yeah. Like, do I start the new thing that looks really cool, but I've already leveled this thing? You know what I mean?
It doesn't do a great job. I mean, there's a little meter that says you get one extra health or one extra damage point, and you don't really get an indication of, like, how well is that going to help me throughout this next part of the game. And I feel like you do get the one thing that you're like, this is the good old reliable thing that you focus all of your attention on, because you get so many of those power nodes in the beginning.
Yeah.
That when you start to get more weapons later, you're like, well, I've already put so much stock into this one thing.
That's kind of a turnoff.
I
want to get new stuff, and I don't want to feel like penalized because I've already upgraded the first gun I got, and that's all I'm going to use the entire game.
I actually have a philosophical question that it's interesting because I played a game this week as well that I cannot speak to that this is very indicative of.
It's the worst show.
Embargo sucks.
Next week it's going to be awesome. You think back, like the, you know.
Oh, by the way, we will be talking about this game on TRS on the Tuesday episode, which is when the embargo comes up. So if you want to hear about that.
Okay. Slide it in early.
But philosophically, I ask you guys, this is a thing that's in all games. It's in the game that we can't talk about. It's in Dead Space 2, where you have to make choices where you're leveling up. That's the carrot on the stick, and it's a lot of fun. You want to get more stuff so you can level up the weapons that you have. But I always feel like I wish – you just mentioned this. I wish I knew what the next levels are going to be. Like, I wish I had the information of – because after I play the level, I go, oh, that's how I would have leveled that thing up. But is that – yeah. Is that game design? Like, am I supposed to not? It would have been too easy if I had known how I would have. Or is there another way of designing the moment so you could see? Like, I was even thinking, Ocarina of Time in the 3DS, there's those moments where you can get the hint and they show a little video.
Right.
Of what's, or, like, even a recommendation of this next level is,
That goes to your time travel game that you want to make.
That's right. You want to make a time travel game.
He wants to make the game where when you come, like on a role-playing game where you come to a decision point and you see how each happens of them
that's
play
cool
out so that you can make your decision.
Well, you know, a game that does that is DC Universe Online. When you go and select to go to your power, it actually shows you a little screen of like, this is what your character
does. Infamous do that as well? Infamous shows you how badass that power will be.
It sort of gives you
an animation of like, you know,
video.
Think about like a wrestling, you know, the SmackDown games or those No Mercy games. When you go to select the name of a thing, like what the hell is that? It'll show you a little animation of this is what it is.
Yeah.
I think games need to do a better job of indicating what it is that upgrade is going to do other than you get one extra.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than upgrading something and being like, damn, I should have upgraded this is garbage. I should have upgraded thing.
Exactly. And it's like,
respec.
Give me
paying power nodes for a fucking respec.
No, but that's
five fucking power nodes.
That's the thing I hated about the Dead Space system was like, okay, they allowed you to funnel it into something else if you screwed up, but it was almost, you got penalized so much for it. It was like, well, I'm just going to stick out with what I have because it's going to be too detrimental.
Also, in Dead Space 2, that pisses me off. You can't respec until you get to Chapter 7, which is halfway through the game.
Yeah, man.
And that's sort of a pain.
The two things that I could boil this down to is, one, if it, let me play around with the weapon to see if I like it or not before I buy it. You know what I mean? Pay the power nodes for it.
Test drive.
Buy it. Yeah. Let me test drive it. There's no negative. As a game designer, there's no negative to you for that. And you want me to have the most fun experience. I don't want to have a chore through,
right,
I leveled all this thing, I don't even like it. And I go, also, if I'm going to have a bunch, if I have to make the decision between, do I want the bursty weapon or the long range weapon, let me know if the whole next level is going to be a bunch of little guys coming at me where I want the bursty weapon.
That is a pain in the ass.
It's like that. Because is the, but I, awesome. I just, I guess I want to know, like, is the intention, is there any benefit, like floaty controls, where we're saying that is intended in N plus, you know?
I think
any benefit to me not having that knowledge? Like, isn't there another way to.
I think specifically with Dead Space, the game is sort of built to play multiple times because there's like the new game plus thing. Yeah. So I don't think you're ever supposed to go through that. I don't think they ever intended you to go through that game and collect enough power notes to, you know, upgrade everything.
Right.
Because they want you to make keep going choices. Back. But I mean, like, if it's going to be a detriment to my gameplay experience, that's when it bothers
right.
me.
And there's still a tough choice in, do you want to be big, slow, power guy, or do you want to be... Slim, small, precise guy. That's a choice I'd love to make. I don't know. I don't have the answer to. I always feel like I don't even have even in games like Dragon Age, whatever. It's like I don't even have the answer because I don't know.
Well, that's like
what
that's
I want.
That's
I
like
know
the
what
role playing game that
goes
that you turn it on and the first thing is like, which class do you want to be?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Yes.
Yeah.
I want to make that choice, but I want to be given all the information to so I feel like I feel powerful in the choice that I made. Not like, well, I didn't even know what it was going to mean to do that anyway.
Well, we're going to choose to take a break right now. Later on in the show, again, we have a track from Mr. Andy Reid and Yug, Vivacious, brand new track that's going to be available now.
It is out now, yes.
And it's going to be later on the show when We Can Confirmed returns.
Guys, scribbling, wobbling.
Squabbling.
Guys, scribbling, wobbling.
Squabbling.
But you said you'd help us. You said you'd help us, Jeff. You bastard!
Guys, scribbling, wobbling,
squabbling.
But you said you'd help us!
You see the motorcycle that turns into a robot person? It's a motorcycle. And then it turns into actually two robot people. And you can imagine what two people would be like standing next to
each other. You think you lost it?
That's pretty amazing.
That's a very bold statement that I would not agree to.
You know what a motorcycle is, right?
Squabbling.
It's like a car, but it has only two wheels. And goes really fast and looks awesome.
Okay, yeah, I think.
And they have like robot parts.
Yeah, you think you lost me?
I know, that's where I lost you.
I think I've seen them, yeah.
Those androgynous characters.
You got that, right? And you know what a person is.
I'm willing to be sold.
Yeah, you think you lost me?
Never really wobbling. Spoke to me.
Wait, slow down. Can you talk? Tell me that slow.
You hate their culture and their way of life. Everything they hold dear.
Yeah, no, that's a little weird. Oh, Canada.
You can't be bored with something squabbling. You never tried.
Squabbling.
Guys, squibbling, quabbling.
Squabbling.
Del Rio with another amazing mix. Thank you, Del Rio. Welcome back to We Can Confirm, the official podcast of ShaqNews.com. I'm going to keep saying that because it's true. And you should be going to ShaqNews.com. We just actually released a brand new update on our article pages. So you can go in and check out a bunch of information. When you look at a news page, there's a box on the bottom that shows like screenshots and video and news that's related to it. Awesome. Awesome stuff there. And also, before we start listener feedback, I wanted to give a shout out to something we should have mentioned last week and forgot. ShaqCon, which is a convention made by Shaqers. They themselves
celebrating the life and career of Shaquille O'Neal.
Yes, ShaqCon,
nonstop Shaq Fu marathon.
Steel
is playing on yeah. loop.
Well, Kazam. In 3D, of course.
Yeah. Of course,
you need
3D.
To have the 3D.
So
ShaqCon was a convention that was Shaqers, people from ShaqNews.com, the community, decided that they wanted to go and hang out together. So they booked a conference room in Vegas. They went to Cirque du Soleil. They did all this crazy stuff. And all by themselves, they decided to go there.
By themselves, together.
Together, exactly. So I just wanted to say, I'm not entirely sure what her actual, I'm assuming her name is Laura, but her Shaq username is Lorgasms. Thank you, Lorgasms.
All right.
That is all we're going
it
to
was
say
a pleasure.
About that. That's about as far as we're going to go. Also, actually, I should mention this. It's ironic and a little sad that Garnet Lee is not on this episode because it's episode 69.
Oh, we took measures to
prevent
it.
Is that why you shipped him to Japan? You figured he couldn't throw in you
at this
across
point,
the
he's
ocean?
Probably crawling out of the crate we put him in, figuring out where he is. So we have a bunch of Twitter questions. We have questions from the Shaq News community from the last episode. We're going to start with something that, Andy, I know you want to talk about, and that's Nintendo. So Shaq user MH Silver and Cruel Legacy both say that they cannot muster any enthusiasm for Zelda or the Wii U, they're starting to get a little frustrated. Or
these are my guys right here.
Are continuing to get frustrated with Nintendo right now. So gamers want Nintendo to focus on the hardcore market because they feel like they were left behind during the Wii.
Who cares?
But let me finish my point. Calm down.
I'm ready. I'm chomping at the bit.
But what about the game? What about the Wii U concerns you as a hardcore gamer? Why do you think that it's going to? Why are you dismissing it?
I have no interest in it. Okay. Nintendo, they tricked me with the Wii. They tricked me. They got me. They got my money. That's
what,
it.
What about I'm it, done. Though, that they trick you with?
They tricked me with, oh, well, we're going to do this cool thing. It's new. And I say, Wii Sports, when you first see Wii Sports, like when the Wii came out, I mean, that was pretty awesome. You know? But then they did nothing.
Well, really,
with the motion stuff, nothing as captivating as the original Wii Sports. You know, like, and
Sports Resort.
Wait, WarioWare Smooth Moves was awesome.
No. Like,
there's stuff they implemented in Metroid was really good.
Yeah.
What would you have wanted?
You know what? That's the hard question, right? Like, everyone complains about this stuff. Like,
wait,
what
Super
would
Mario
you
Galaxy?
Do? Yeah, you know what?
Yeah. But the Wii controller, I think, is the
that's
is
the problem.
Saying? The motion
that's
did not
the problem.
Okay, assist that.
Me as a hardcore player, one to one,
a little bit
pointing
yeah.
it.
I really wish that Sony had the Move at the same time, because the control, the accuracy, the closer to one to one, that became the problem. Because me sitting there, I'm going, okay, you can do all this cool stuff, and if it was precise. And wasn't dropping signals, or I wasn't pointing right at the bar the right way.
It sounds like two different issues. I mean,
that was one issue.
Well, they didn't do anything.
The other issue is there was nothing to enhance the experience, and then it just was a monotony of the same game. Nintendo, they just put out the same game every time.
Well, they
put with the exception of Galaxy, but everything else just seems to be a constant rehash of the same stuff. People get all revved up.
Well, I would not agree with that, though, because look at something like how they've changed Zelda over the years. The core of the game is the same, but Wind Waker is vastly different from Twilight Princess. Then there's Metroid, who goes from 2D to 3D when Retro took over that series, and it went to a first-person game, which is probably my favorite game of last generation, Metroid Prime, the original one. So, I mean, I think that they do make those changes. My question, though, is do you think that we've aged and Nintendo hasn't aged with us?
Yes.
And they're still making the same kinds of experiences?
There's definitely truth in that statement, but I'm also confused because the thing I was most excited about with the announcement of the Wii U was seeing that HD Zelda, that next-gen looking Zelda, and the idea that now they are going to. I mean, that's what I think the news of the Wii U is, aside from that controller.
Yeah, but I'm not going to spend whatever it's going to cost just to play HD Zelda. That doesn't excite me. That doesn't make me want to buy a whole new system again.
But I think the potential is there that we get a next-gen Zelda. We get a next-gen, traditional next-gen, the way we perceive it, hardcore gamers, like an Xbox or PlayStation.
Right.
Next-gen games that Nintendo is making, period. Whether that be Zelda, Mario, the games they make already, and their other games that they will be making.
But it's outside of the four core Nintendo franchises. What else are you going to get? You're going to get Batman Arkham City a year after? Like, who cares?
Some of those announcements were...
maybe at first it'll be a year after, but I would assume that they would then be on the
same
page.
I'm sure
page.
They're going to be on the track. But it's just like, again, I've already committed to, you know, I have my PS3 and I have an Xbox and I've committed to building up my gamer tags and everything else. And it's almost like...
But if tomorrow Sony announces PS4, are you going to get excited?
As long as they carry over my stuff. The same with Xbox when they launch the new one.
By stuff, do you mean your franchises?
My game card.
Okay.
That's really what I care about. Like, all the stuff I've accomplished, like all my trophies and stuff, are they going to carry over the next system?
So do you think you don't really like the Wii primarily because you don't have sort of that
investment
that's
into
one
the
thing.
Online
that's
stuff?
One thing for sure. And I think a lot of people, like in the hardcore market, they, you know, that's something that they like because it's something you can actually show to the outside world. Like, this is my hobby. Well, no, it's my hobby.
Justified.
Right?
Please justify my existence.
I am a real gamer.
I'm a real game. No, but you know, it's like getting a trophy in sports and putting it up on your mantle. It's like, I've accomplished this, you know, and it's my hobby. It's a passion. And like, you want to kind of share that with
some
people.
Sort of trophy or achievement.
Yeah, something like that. Some might say that'd be a good name to call it. But I mean, the biggest thing is that Nintendo, the Wii U, is just going to be where PS3 and Xbox are already, and not even
in terms of the graphics,
and not even to that level. Well, and online, I mean, Nintendo. I have no confidence whatsoever that Nintendo is going to deliver a quality online experience.
I anticipate it's going to be very shaky, much like Sony's PlayStation Network was in the beginning.
And also recently.
And also, well, for different reasons.
That's a different thing altogether.
For vastly different reasons, yeah.
I mean, it was encouraging that they dropping friend codes. Thank God. That was the...
We talked about this last week.
But I mean, it sums it up. Nintendo is Disney. Okay, and the fact that
Disney's pretty freaking awesome.
No. Listen, they're gonna make tons of money. There's a huge market for it, but they are a family. Family first. They're kids, family safe. You know it's their core stuff. Well, you know when you go see a Disney Pixar thing, it's gonna be quality.
I don't understand.
You're gonna enjoy it.
How is that bad though?
No, but it's not. It doesn't speak to me. You know, when I see the new Cars trailer, I don't get revved up and excited. I know if I go and see it, it's probably going to be a good quality movie. There'll be some stuff for the kids, stuff for the adults. Well, I'm going to enjoy myself.
Isn't Nintendo,
but don't get excited.
But isn't Nintendo exactly saying, hey, we're not just for families, we're going to have Batman Arkham Asylum?
They're trying, but I think the Wii lost me. It killed me out, and now it's like, I can get those already. I don't need to buy another box.
My question to you is, and first let me say that, like, The Rock... Awesome action movie, badass action flick. That's Disney as well. That's Touchstone.
No, it's Touchstone.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, which is Disney.
Absolutely.
And I think, but that's exactly what I took away from Nintendo was
they're trying to market this.
We're
going to
do this other thing.
They're
going to put also those things out. So Disney has a family thing, but they also do these other things. And I think Nintendo that. So what I want to ask you though is why? Because it sounds like they are trying to solve your problem,
but
that you had
with
the Wii.
It's the styles of games. Like, Ocarina of Time is like one of my all-time favorite games, but I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. That's a game of days of yore and yesteryear.
Why?
I'm just kind of past the kiddie look and feel.
Do you have a Wii?
I have a Wii.
Okay.
As I said, they tricked me. They got my money.
But I mean,
Wii.
Have you played Extraction? Have you played, House of the Dead Overkill?
Rail shooters.
Heroes. I mean, my point is that those games, mature hardcore games that don't sell.
And because that's not their Nintendo is shown that they don't care about.
But those games
anymore.
Exist. How can they show that they don't care?
But Nintendo didn't make them, and the
right,
quality
but those
isn't
games have been
there.
Licensed to be on those systems, and
because,
all those games
they
were exclusive at the time.
They thought those, 80 million people or whatever the number is now, like 200 and what million that own a Wii?
I don't think it's that.
I'm saying. Like those developers thought those people own a Wii. They want this. Not at 480p. Not with no online capability. No.
I kind of agree with everything you're saying. I just feel like the purpose of the Wii U in many ways, beyond there being some awesome new technological breakthroughs with it, is that it should be for hardcore gamers and should answer these problems.
The one cool thing, they show the controller and the thing, and then they say, oh, well, we're not going to tell you whether or not you can use more than one. There's a flaw right there, right off the bat.
Specs aren't final.
No, I agree. Look, everyone can say that. I sit back, that's not the final thing. Well, no, this is what they showed for public consumption. So you got to go on what they've shown. You can't speculate.
That's fair.
Yeah, but
right?
I think it's filled with potential. I think they showed potential. It's just, same thing as when we saw Kinect a year before, PlayStation Move a year before. It was just, obviously that's not actually how it is now, but it's like, what's the potential? What's the implications of what that could be? And I think that's what the Zelda trailer showed, and that's what the controller showed. It's like, here's the kind of thing that this is going to be in a year or 2 years.
I'm kind of playing devil's advocate because I own a Wii and I don't even think mine's hooked up. It might be still in a box.
Yeah, me too. That's why I think
mine's been collecting dust for
I mean?
2 years.
But I don't, the same way that when we talk about Kinect on this show, I don't just immediately say, well, fuck it. They haven't shown me anything yet. I'm just going to assume it's going to be shit from here.
But I didn't buy a Kinect. I didn't buy Move because they haven't shown any compelling software yet.
It's easy to dismiss. I think it's easy to, and again, I agree with some of the things you're saying as well, but I think it's easy to dismiss, like, I don't want kiddie stuff, but I think the Wii will, and DS even more, will do more for creating people like us in 10, 15 years.
100%.
And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. 100%. Because I don't want Xbox and PS3-esque games, I don't want Gears of War, etc., to be marketed to my 6-year-old nephew.
There's enough 12-year-olds playing those games already that piss me off. So.
I agree, but I do want my 6-year-old nephew to grow up to love those things as much as I do.
And this is my point. as a you know, in my mid 30s as a gamer, Nintendo is not for me. It is not for older, hardcore, mature gamers. It is for tweens and teens and or
yeah,
older
which was
gamers.
The original question I had. Do you not think that Nintendo maybe has not aged with us?
And that's what I agreed with. And that this is my whole juxtaposition. And this is why I'm done with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Is like when I was a kid, I grew up. I had the original Nintendo the year it came out, and I loved it. I played all Mario. You know, Super Mario 3 is another one of my favorite games. But it was a product of the past. Games have evolved so much now. If anything, I would love it if Nintendo actually put their software out on the other platforms.
Well, I don't see how that
because then I can just play it on my box. Well, because then I don't have to buy another box. Mm. You know, and then I can play the four Nintendo games I want.
I just saw a flash of Dennis Dyack in the room.
Well, yeah. Oh, the one console. Yeah. Whatever. No, competition.
Nintendo never.
Competition is good.
And Nintendo never puts out the Wii. We live in a very different universe.
I agree. Look, you know, I can't take away from their success. That's hard fact, right? They've made a ton of money. But I'm sure there's lots of people like me that bought a Wii. And you're even saying it. When's the last time you played your Wii?
No.
When's the last time you got excited about a Wii game?
But that doesn't necessarily.
Years?
I'm not willing to, paint the Wii U with the same brush.
Well, how did the GameCube go?
I loved my GameCube.
I love my GameCube as well.
Yeah, but same thing, right? Like
it just sounds. I mean,
it's Nintendo has not
my
shown
roommate's GameCube.
No one. Nintendo has not. And the last two Nintendo systems have not compelled me to go. Okay, for me and what games I like and the way I like to play in today's world. I'm going to shell out another couple $100 to buy another Nintendo box.
I'm with you, though, Zev. There's no finer experience that generation than the first Metroid Prime on GameCube. That, for me, and Wind Waker, I think those are...
That generation was great for Nintendo because they had a lot of innovation. I mean, Pikmin came out of that generation. You know, they have... There certainly is... A much broader variety of software that comes out of this one company than I think, you know, a Microsoft or, though they have attempted it, or Sony, the same.
I'd say
same
Sony's
board.
A little more broad-based in the games they publish than Microsoft's very shooter-centric. But well, Sony, I mean, Sony.
I think Sony deserves a lot of credit for kind of encouraging
especially on PSN.
Those riskier downloadable, yeah.
Flower Microsoft never would have put. I was just gonna say Flower. Yeah. You would never see Flower.
Eco,
published by
Shadow
Microsoft.
Of the Colossus.
I don't know that that's true. Like, I don't know what that base is in.
Well,
I mean, they've
I
done art
really,
house games.
I think it's really, you know, really esoteric for them. So
they've done art house games, so I'm not entirely sure kind of where that comes
maybe
from.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the perception of the console too, right? It's a little bit of
maybe. Do you when you play Black Ops? Do you play or Modern Warfare 2? Do you play it on your PS3 or your 360?
Yes, I actually like the PS3 controls better. And also, I'm not a fan of the Xbox controller. I'm a weird guy.
Okay.
The Xbox controller, I don't like it.
Let's move on to something else. This one comes from Red Swirl, who wrote in the Shaq News feed that Take-Two label president Christopher Martin talked about XCOM, which is a game that's been shown off at two E3s now. It's changed drastically over the last 2 years, but even more so since the game was announced. Originally a strategy title, now a shooter, first-person shooter. And then Chris Hartman from Take-Two talked about
it's
how
like Coldplay wrote it.
talked about how the strategy genre is not contemporary to this level of consoles or this generation of consoles, which leads me to believe that he is trying to apologize or not or sidestep the fact that people really want XCOM to be a strategy game, but. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys saw XCOM at E3.
We did.
Okay.
Both years.
Yeah.
But as guys, you talked about StarCraft.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the statement that the strategy genre is not contemporary for this generation?
In a sense, I do. In a sense, I do. I mean, I think it doesn't speak to the masses the way it used to. I think StarCraft is... I think any Blizzard game is sort of an exception to any rule you want. Whatever rule there is, the Blizzard game, there's a Blizzard game that's an exception to it.
Let's focus specifically on the console.
Well, that's the problem. That's really the issue, mm-hmm. is that strategy games don't work well on consoles.
It's because the controls,
Civ Rev is a fantastic game.
Not a huge seller?
No, it actually sold very well.
Did it really?
It did sell very well.
Well, I stand corrected. I love that game. That was actually my game of the year that year.
And it was the game that broke the ice for you for...
Yeah. I think that the, I think those kinds of controls can work. Now, that's a turn-based game. I think turn-based can work on any platform because it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Real time's a different story.
Yes. It doesn't matter, you know, the controls.
Did the Halo one not do well?
I think it did okay.
I think it did okay. It was close it didn't to do a Halo
million.
Numbers.
It was close to a million, wasn't it?
It did.
There's no sequel.
It may have been more than that.
You know, that's right.
Halo.
And Ensemble was closed down shortly after the game was released.
All right.
But so make your own conclusions.
The thing that I potentially dig about XCOM is that the combination of strategy and first-person shooters. So I'm trying to even remember what we saw this year. I believe there was some... So like I like Mass I love the strategy that's involved in the Mass Effect games because it's different than Gears of War. It's different than any third person shooter. I am strategizing. I am using my powers and my teammates' powers to attack this thing and I'm problem solving out of battles. So I love that. And I feel like there was some of that in. Wasn't there like gearing up for the mission before you go on it?
Yeah, you have your team and you constitute your team. Then you can go out and get alien tech in the field, and you can employ it in the field, or you can bring it back. And
you have to make choices. You had to make. You can either like spend all your points or mana, whatever it was in the game, to use this weapon now to do some awesome shit, like clear the whatever, or you can bring it back with you so you can have it for later. Like. That kind of choice making is,
but it's very different than what XCOM
for
was.
For sure,
I think XCOM that. As it was could work on a console control wise turn based game. I don't think it's the kind of thing that you know jazzes the kids these days, and I think that's a shame. And I hope that we get to a cycle where those games kind of come back into vogue, but. I do think that it needs to have big, flashy explosions and be quick-paced in order for a lot of people to pay attention.
And it's not for a lack of trying. Supreme Commander 2 has come out on console. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings, Battle for Middle-earth came out on console.
Yeah.
There was a few actual real-time strategy games that came out on console that really didn't light any fires. Civ Rev being turn-based
XCOM turn-based, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So... But
I think there should be more of those kinds of games. I mean, obviously, I'm a big board gamer and I like strategy and I like these kinds of tactical moment to moment making big decision games. I'm a huge fan of the Civilization series. I think there should be more games like that. And I think more of the problem, perhaps, is screenshots. I think a screen.
Yeah.
Show me one screenshot of StarCraft and another screenshot of StarCraft, and if I'm not a StarCraft player, do I know what the hell's going on from one to the other? Why is one interesting compared to
the
other?
It's so funny you say that because I acquire when we for a Totally Rad show, I get the images every week that Mike puts in when we were talking about something, and whenever we talk about Diablo or StarCraft or even World of War or any MMO. And I'm trying to find a really cool image that, like, because when we're really into it, I want to, like, find an image that will get people to be like, oh, it looks awesome, you know? And I was like, this screenshot looks terrible. Like, did nothing about that. So I always grab a screenshot from, like, a cutscene or what, you know what I mean? Like,
even movies. Even movie versions of these strategy games, especially a turn-based game, where it's just like, you know, you're just sitting there and it's nothing.
Because they're not, I always wanted them to show, like, a side of the player and what they're doing. I think it gives it more context, you know, like especially in a hardcore StarCraft. The thing I find
you can see a guy going.
Well, no, or even well, I mean, at least something. Crazy. But to see that, maybe go whoa, you know, there's a lot going on here. It's not just like kind of you know you're clicking a couple of things and then stuff happens. It's like there's actual like technique and everything else to it. But one thing I don't
understand.
The one thing I don't understand is especially like with PS3, it supports a keyboard and mouse.
Right.
So why isn't someone taking a flyer on offering those controls and trying?
It's a big barrier to entry, though.
I think, and they also
plug in my keyboard and mouse.
I think
if I have a keyboard and mouse, I have a computer, and I'm going to play it on the
computer. No, well, right. I have a keyboard and mouse, but I have a Mac. So if the game's not on a Mac, I can't play it.
I also think that they think it might split the
I know they're saying it's not fair. It's not fair, but you know what? The games haven't been working. So why not give the people who like those games the control scheme they're used to? Your system supports it.
Right.
Take a chance. It doesn't cost you anything. It's not like you have to bundle a keyboard into it. And pretty much everyone has now at least the USB keyboard. If they don't have a Bluetooth one. They at least have USB.
But that's putting a Band-Aid on the problem.
No, but I'm saying maybe it's just to try it, to get people hooked, or, you know, like anything to maybe make these games work. Why not try it?
This doesn't really answer the strategy games on console situation, but we played a game recently on the iPad that was basically XCOM. It's called Hunters.
Yeah, we talked about it on here too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. In some senses, the iPad or things like it are kind of a next generation console. Mm-hmm. And
it's a great point.
And the strategy games, there are not enough of them on the iPad. I mean,
but there are a ton of them.
Right, but they're
not enough. We don't have those cream of the crop.
Yeah, but I'm
supporting your point is that. They work, and people play them.
Yeah, right.
The only thing I'll say quickly to this is I don't see much of a difference between the heat that XCOM gets versus the heat Bethesda got for Fallout 3 when that was first announced.
You don't see the difference?
I don't see much of a difference between the heat between the two. Because they both came from the same kind of title.
It's the same thing in the sense that it's different. We hate difference.
Right. That's my point. Yeah. My point is that it seems like people are not willing to give this a chance. And Fallout 3 turned out pretty good, so maybe we should at least wait to be able to play this game before people kind of jump on this idea of whether or not XCOM is going to be a solid game.
And
Fallout,
I'm not willing to give you that.
You're not willing to try the game before you decide you don't like it?
No, we make opinions first. I'm not saying that. Believe me, I'm a big advocate for try it before you hate it. But in this particular case, I think it's a little – Fallout 3 is still a role-playing game.
Yeah.
And XCOM is a completely different game in that universe. It's a completely different kind of game in that universe. What I loved about XCOM when I was growing up is that kind of gameplay, and you're not getting anything remotely close to it. Yes, Fallout 3 is a different perspective and a different kind of engine, but you're basically playing in the same way.
But okay. I would say about Fallout 3, there are non-role-playing elements that are strategic elements that sort of embrace the idea of playing strategically. That VAT system, that I love that VAT system because I have to make strategic choices with how I allocate my weapon. And that isn't a first-person shooter. That could be – you could have a VAT system in the new XCOM game. I mean, you don't need the role-playing elements to – and you don't – like you can embrace the – sensations and the game mechanics, the way you have to game play in a strategy game in a first-person shooter.
Right.
And whether it's to the degree that Fallout does it or Mass Effect or whatever XCOM will do.
My comparison to the point is that I'm hoping that XCOM, and I haven't played it or actually I've seen it live, I'm hoping it's more Fallout 3 than it is Call of Duty, which I think when people hear first-person shooter, they think Call of Duty.
Mm. Well, it's certainly indicated that in the most recent showing that there's more to it than just running around blasting people in the face.
And when
the first showing, it was Ghostbusters the game.
Yeah, and they changed all those enemies and everything else.
Yeah.
This last one, because we're running out of time, but I want to hit something MH Silver and Tofu Dude in Shaq News on ShaqNews.com talked about.
The Tofu Dude.
Actually, it might be Mr. It might be his father. I'm not sure. Linearity in games.
Sir. Tofu Dude.
It seems like every time we talk about a game being linear, we talked about Final Fantasy 13 last week. It seems like every time you hear the word linear, it sounds like you're saying a bad word. Like we should be beeping you if you're on TV and you said linear. What about linear games in this generation? Why does linear have a negative connotation with it? Now?
Because we want choice. Interactive games are video games are interactive, and more interactivity is always better, in my opinion. And the more control I feel like I have over what I'm doing and what I'm doing moment to moment, is the more interactive it feels and the more I'm invested in that world. I feel like it is giving me more choice. Choice is always better. So if you remove the choice of where I can go next, I find it to be detrimental to my level of interactivity and detrimental to my level of fun.
The best example that came out of this thread, and I want to get your quick impressions because we got to wrap it up, is Batman Arkham Asylum versus Batman Arkham City. Arkham Asylum, linear game, point A to point B, where you can kind of play around within that world, but it was a linear storyline. Arkham City, very different. Do you think that Arkham City has the potential to be better specifically because now it's open world?
Yes. Guys,
I don't know. Well, how much have you guys played of it? Because I know, like me, I haven't played it yet. So
we got to play a little bit of E3, but
how open world does it feel? That's what I want.
Very open world. Yeah. But I will say to it that it's open world. It seems to me like there's an open environment to get to where you need to be, and then when you're there,
it's linear.
It's inside. You're inside a house or a mansion or whatever it is. But I want to say that it's not that linear means something bad. It's that we are only citing it when we are rubbing up against it. That there's a lot of linear games that we don't feel its walls. We don't feel its linearity. So we are happy to, you know, and I even sometimes really enjoy, sometimes I get overwhelmed with open world games. And I really enjoy when I am on a mission, when I do have a goal, and I can like really dive in, almost like rules in science fiction, you know, like you choose those rules and then you fully explore that. I fully explore the thing I have to do on my way to my mission, as opposed to being like, I'm going halfway through this mission. I don't even know if it's the right one. Maybe I'm going to turn back around and go do the other thing. I get very overwhelmed by that. So sometimes I really enjoy it. But I think we use it. It's just we say it's a bad thing because we're feeling the linear. We're feeling the – when you get a feeling of – and this is, speaks to the Arkham City versus Asylum. I think we say it's a bad thing when there's something that we want to do and aren't allowed to do it.
That's a great point I think that's exactly what Bethesda is always talking about when they say – hey, you see that mountain over there? You can walk to it.
You can go over there.
That is exactly the idea. Is I did want to. I was always curious if I could get to that mountain because it's there. It looks interesting. You know, it's when you're in a situation where it's like, man, I really wish I could go and do that, but the game won't let me.
And Half-Life 2 is a very linear game, but you never have a moment where you're like, I want to get that. You always somehow are seeing the thing that you want to see, that you need to see, and you want to get there. You're never looking at the thing that you shouldn't see, that you don't feel the walls in Half-Life 2.
It's good storytelling.
I think
that's
how they hide it, almost.
The two games I'm looking forward to the most this year are probably Skyrim, mm-hmm. very open world game, Uncharted 3, very linear.
Yeah, good point.
So, I mean, those are two experiences that are vastly different, but I think, like Dan says, it is those walls. Once you start to see that you can't go somewhere, that's when you start to feel like it's detrimental.
That's what Uncharted does well, is they show you something cool that they sort of funnel you to. You want to go there, and then they send you there.
And
feel cheated.
Not only that, but what I love about Uncharted, and I even love about the most recent Call of Duties, is that I'm on this roller coaster ride. I didn't miss any. Like, I want to be directed. Sometimes it's a joy to be directed, to have a moment that they specifically designed to make you feel awesome that you can't have. You either stumble upon in a game and make your own fun, or you miss it. You know, so there's something. There is a joy to linearity, to extreme linearity, Uncharted.
I think it's totally contingent to what game. It's the same question, you know, we had a question before the show about cutscenes. I think it's just dependent. Depends on the type of game you're doing. If you're doing a platformer, how do you not make it open world, right? How do you make it open world? It has to be linear. So it doesn't mean the game's going to be bad.
In the words of John Locke, don't tell me what I can't do.
Wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the time is now. Mr. Andy Reid, your brand new track, Vivacious, with Yug, is going to be dropping right now. Where can people pick it up if they want to grab it?
Pick it up exclusively on Beatport. So all you who love the all things house and stuff, you should know what Beatport is. But you can hit us up on 44thandfilth.com, and there's links there to pick it up. And please support artists and buy music legally.
And here it is, Vivacious. Vivacious by Yug and DJ Andy Reid, who is joining us today, out now on 44th and 5th and available exclusively on beatport.com. Thanks, man, for bringing that with you.
Awesome. No problem.
That was awesome.
A little disco never hurt anybody.
Let us jump into the front page. We got...
It may have hurt some people.
Okay, maybe.
Studio
54.
Various crotch-related incidents attempted splits. No.
Well, it's good now in retrospect.
Crotch-related injuries.
Crotch-related splits.
At least we know what my new indie band is going to be called. June NPDs were released yesterday, and surprisingly, despite Wedbush Morgan having the initial sales estimates for Duke Nukem Forever, the game came in second place in the month of June, behind only L.A. Noire, who was still in first place from last month when they were in first from when they released in May. Number three came in at Infamous 2, which some people were worried about. The game was in the middle of E3, which doesn't get a lot of buzz, so sometimes the hardest core market tends to focus on E3 and not go to the store to buy a game, so it's good to hear that PS3 exclusive got into the NPDs. Now, I don't know if you guys follow the NPDs recently. Over the last few months, they've changed it so they don't actually give us the data. They just tell us these are the games that are in first place. They used to say per platform. So... because now it's combined, L.A. Noire is in first place because it's sold a lot. It's sold on 360 and PS3. So the fact that Infamous 2 is in third place on one platform, that's pretty big.
Probably good numbers. I hate the fact, though, that they got rid of letting you tell the numbers. I used to look forward to the NPDs. Now I could care less because it's like, whatever.
It's my same problem with American Idol. You never know how many people voted for specific people.
That is a good point. No, I don't watch American Idol, but that is a good point. You don't know these numbers. You don't know
how to relate
to them.
I had the same criticism of that. Was I wish they would show the numbers.
Yeah.
Because then you get what happened in the last... Anyways,
we're talking about
that I watched
American
Idol.
Anyways.
Now?
All right.
I'm in music. It's something music.
Somewhere Garnett Lee is weeping. Yeah. We're talking about American Idol. Another thing that came out of the NPD numbers is Microsoft boasted that they've sold over 500,000 consoles last month. For the 6th month in a row, they've been the top-selling hardware provider, or in terms of the consoles, not the handhelds. I think the DS is still out ahead.
Really? Microsoft isn't selling a lot of handhelds?
I know. Windows Phone 7's not doing too good. I don't think it really matters to them anyway. It's not really the same division. The industry, though, is down, which is something that came out last week. There was a report from I can't remember if it was NPD, talking about how the industry, though certain game sales are up, like hardware sales are up, the actual industry is trending downwards. So you're starting to see that really deep slope. I mean, we're in year 7 or 8 of this console cycle now.
No way. Really?
2005.
Yeah, it's been forever.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, we're close.
Well, the Matrix came out last week, right? So
it's like 6. We're like 6 years deep.
Oh,
so
my God.
It's like, I mean, this is a pretty long... I don't know what the longest console cycle is off the top of my head.
It's
got to
be up there.
It's got to be up there. Especially, I mean, and think about how many platforms are available now versus, like, you know, when we were kids.
And think the demand for new is probably really low. Like, I have no interest in buying a new console right now.
Really? I was going to say the opposite. This is the best. I think this is the most exciting time because games are reaching they're using the maximum potential of the console. And then we get really exciting, like, oh, that's what it's next thing's going to look like, you know? We're at that point where, like, you don't see how it could possibly, although I feel I do, but that it could look better. But I think a lot of people feel like, this looks amazing. Like, when I first saw, you know, PlayStation, you know, it was like Battle Arena Toshinden playing at the Electronics Boutique over and over again. I was like, ow, I can't believe it looks like that. It'll never look better. How can it possibly look better than that, you know? And that's where we're at now. And, like, and I love the idea that soon we may see, you know, at the next E3, whatever it is, like, that's what it's going to look like. Like, every day
that,
on my, you know.
That graphics demo that the Unreal... I think NVIDIA put it out, or somebody put it out.
They're showing the new, like, foliage and stuff.
Yeah, it was this sort of like Blade Runner esque world with a guy with a cigar. And,
you haven't seen it?
How do I
see it?
I know that.
It's super cool. It's kind of what I think it's going to all look like. It looks really cool.
It needs to all look like pre rendered cuts.
It will.
That's what we were hearing about this, and I feel like this is not. You know,
really?
This is. It's not.
You don't think
it's game engine-y. It's great game engine-y, but it's game engine-y.
You don't think Uncharted looks like a pre-rendered cutscene of the previous generation?
No, because the previous generation still looked like not quite Pixar, but it looked like a CG animated movie.
Final Fantasy 13 has like a seamless going from a pre-rendered cutscene to gameplay.
I don't agree. There is a quality.
Yeah.
That rolls seamlessly.
I don't think so. There is a quality to it that is very video, especially foliage. Mm-hmm. But there is a quality to it that feel even people's faces. That's what was so great about L.A. Noire was I was like, that's what it all needs to be.
Yeah.
And even the graphically wasn't that great, but expression wise, I felt like that really put to shame any other game I looked at after it. It's like, God, people complain about Zemeckis movies with the dead eyes, you know, the mocap. No, dude, look at a video game. We excuse it. We are looking at it in different contexts, so we excuse it.
Right.
But we are not – we can be awesome. It can be – I mean, we should be playing Pixar movies.
I think the feeling with the Zemeckis thing is like they're trying to pull an emotion in a film that you don't really try to pull too much in a game. Well, so people dismiss it because –
they do
you
try.
You don't think –
That's why I've dismissed it because they do try.
You don't think Ratchet & Clank feels like I'm playing a Pixar movie?
No.
Really?
No wow. way, dude. It feels like I think you're getting the Tide commercial. It's white, but I think they could pull out the Tide and be like, that's white. And you'll go, oh, that's white.
Yeah, I agree. It will get there. But I don't feel this.
I still
like,
got static cling.
I don't have this huge urge for the graphical leap. What I'm really more excited about is things like Frostbite, right? The new Frostbite engine.
Yeah.
About environmental interactivity outside of just gameplay.
Oh, yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's the real leap that I'm AI capabilities and environmental, like especially playing shooters, that everything in the world you can interact with it, you know, regardless of just the other players.
Which is why I personally like Bad Company 2 more than Modern Warfare 2 at the time when those two were sort of around the same era or the same year, because it felt like I can strategize a little bit better in Bad Company because I could blow out a wall and like the environment changes as I'm playing.
Unfortunately, that's how it evolved though, is just blow out all the walls.
Right, but I mean,
get a bunch of guys, get in the vehicles, blow up all the.
I mean,
walls,
you can't disparage that, and then Call of Duty not have that, and also disparage.
Oh no, and that's one thing I definitely want more of in Modern Warfare 3. I'm hoping there's a little more environment interaction, especially on the multiplayer side.
Don't bet on it.
I don't.
Unless environment action is you put a glowing explosive on something.
Well, but with Black Ops, at least they started where you can close doors and change pathways and stuff like that. They started it down that path, so I'm hoping that maybe they continue down that path.
Now with closing doors.
I just hope that single-player story gets better than the last
I think it's
two
gonna,
games.
Honestly, I think it's going to be more of the same. It's going to be a Michael Bay movie again.
I'm fine with that.
Which is
some
I'm
Michael
okay
Bay
with that
movies
too.
Are awesome.
I love that.
You know what I mean? Like,
and actually, Black Ops...
So you're confirming
giant Transformers in Modern Warfare 3
love
confirmed.
It.
That actually would be awesome. Like that actually, because I always say
what I want. Just like,
that's Battlefield. Your tank turns into a robot.
What if you're just totally playing a normal Call of Duty game, and then at one level, there's just the tank turns into a robot. You're like, what?
Where did that kill streak come from?
The way that they're going, though, that's what they're going to get to. You know? They've already fired enough nuclear missiles. Now
if I saw that, I think I'd prestige in my pants. Okay.
I've said to Jeff a few times that I would love for them to do Future War. You know, but now my mind is being blown by the idea of that. Yeah, giant freaking it's the same kind of gritty Black Hawk, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer action flick, but with robots.
that is the one thing that the Transformer movies have that's kind of interesting is that
Shia LaBeouf.
They take that military very seriously.
Well, yeah, but also that in every other kind of robot-y kind of movie, it's always in the future. And these are robots that are hanging out in today's Chicago.
They're in disguise.
I like that. They're more than meets the eye.
Also, I was listening to the last episode where we were talking about the stealth mode in Transformers, the new game, and I'm thinking, how is a 50-foot tall robot
stealth
have a stealth mode?
He's crouched.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He has
behind a bush.
He has a 60-foot tall.
Is this before
brown paper box?
Is this before or after he starts urinating everywhere? I just don't.
You know what I just realized when you said it's robots in. Not in the future, but in today, it made me think of like you're analyzing. It's almost like analyzing. Oh, it's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and it made me think: why do we not have more things set a long time ago in a galaxy is far, far away.
Because probably that, copyright.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure
no,
Lucas
owns
that.
You don't even need to use those words, but like there should just be way more things
a while
happening.
Back,
over, yeah.
Not near here.
Yeah. Sort of in the distance.
I guess battle. Well, yeah, whatever.
I kind of gave up a little quickly there.
Yeah.
So some sad news. THQ developer Digital Warrington has been officially closed about a month ago, actually. Chaos Studios, makers of Homefront, and Digital Warrington were both said to being closed down by THQ. Digital Warrington created the Red Faction Battlegrounds XBLA PSN game. I don't know if you guys played that. It was the downloadable game that came out before Armageddon. And then they also just released a brand new game called Kill Team, which is an XBLA PSN game that's available now.
Is that the Warhammer game?
The Warhammer one, yeah. So, sadly, the way that it works, so Chaos Studios was closed and that team was dispersed. I think some went to THQ Montreal, some created their own studios. But in the UK, where Digital Warrington is, there's a law that says you need to give your company a 30-day notice before you can close down so those people can find new work or set up their, you know, I think it's a courtesy law. I'm not entirely sure. So exactly 30 days later, they closed down the studios, which coincided the day of release for their very last game. Kill Team came out the day that their studio closed down.
What a weird coincidence. Kill.
There's close to, I think, 50 employees at the UK studio. Close to 36 of them have been let go, 10 of which are going to stay on to finish up the PSN version, actually, that's coming out later this summer. So that's a little awkward, I think, if you're working there, that you are one of those 10 that survived. Some good did come out of this, though. Three new studios have been formed, two of which are development studios, one of which is a consulting firm. So at least and there's also been rumors of other studios in that area that are recruiting those guys, men and women who work at those studios, try to get them to employment. I've never seen a generation. I mean, I guess I didn't really pay attention when I was younger, but it seems like every other week or every other month there's a studio closure and some big name guys.
Have you seen the jobless? I mean, it's.
I'm from Canada. We didn't really have a recession.
Yeah. It's not.
our money still means something.
It's not unique to the games biz, sadly.
It's sad. I mean, it's. Especially when you think about a company like, you know, Bizarre Creations, who has such a great pedigree with, you know, Project Gotham Racing and Blur, which people really enjoyed, they get shut down. And then BlackRock, we talked about last week, got shut down after creating Split Second, which was so fun.
Did these games not perform well? Is that why? Or
THQ? Well, Homefront specifically. I mean, you guys played that on tier.
Yeah.
You guys did a review of that. Yeah. It did not sell well to what they expected, and also the critical reception for the game was not very positive. So they decided to restructure, and part of the restructuring is closing down these studios and letting go a bunch of employees. The Digital Warrington stuff was always kind of touchy because it was like, we're going to create offshoot games that are not really like these franchises but are tied to these franchises. It's like, you know, Red Faction Battlegrounds is a car shooting, like a car fighting game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, how does that apply? You know, it doesn't. Yeah. It's
when
strange.
You hear Red Faction, the last thing you think of is car fighting.
Yeah. Except
that know, was the pitch. When you hear Red Faction, what's the last thing you hear of?
Car fighting.
We're going to do it.
I got this game.
Yeah. It might be true because the last thing I think of a weapon for for Red Faction is a unicorn that shits out rainbows, and that's in the game.
What?
There's a unicorn that shits rainbows, and it's like a laser gun.
You mean a unicorn?
Awesome. You mean one of my favorite games of all time, Robot Unicorn Attack?
I was going to say, is the unicorn from Peggle? Because that'd be cool.
No. It's not.
Take this, you Canadians, you.
bring the thunder.
You're treading.
You realize, like I played competitive hockey. I could like pummel you in about 3 seconds.
Yeah, but that's by law. It doesn't really matter.
Well, that's true.
Very good friend of mine. I think day before yesterday or maybe yesterday left for Montreal.
Really?
Because he was working at THQ, and they shut down the entire department and shipped them to Montreal.
Yeah.
Because the tax structure is such in Canada that it cost them less to move the entire thing than it would be to continue here. And I think that there's a lot of that going on, and I think it has more to do with economy, as you said, the business is down year to year, and it's just a rough time for everybody.
In Ontario and in Quebec, I mean, Canada in general, there is a lot of tax breaks for companies.
Yep.
I mean, just today it was announced.
Happen over there.
Yeah, Silicon Knights today just announced that they got a $3 million grant from the government of Ontario to hire 80 new employees.
To finish the trilogy?
To finish Two Human.
It's like, I want to know what happens!
To fix X-Men, X-Men. What is the game
Destiny?
Called? Destiny. Because, you know, if you saw that at E3. That is
a reference to the fact that it plays similarly to Two Human.
Yes.
I see.
Okay.
You got to follow. You got to look at.
Which is disappointing because I was kind of interested in that game and then all the buzz out of E3 and I was like, okay, that deflated my hype about that.
I liked Two Human.
I did too.
I'm that guy.
I did too, but X-Men Destiny, from what I've heard, and I haven't seen it, did not perform very well at E3. Which is weird that they would even show a game that early, because isn't that kind of what happened with Two Human originally?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You think he'd learn from his past...
I think Activision told him he had to do it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Let's move on. Hey, there was this awesome indie game called Octodad. I don't know if you guys ever played it. Okay, so it was a project that a bunch of indie developers made, and it is basically a father who has two kids and a wife, but the father is an octopus. And the whole entire game is you sort of are this octopus that you need to like kind of live your life using. I think there was a Kinect version at one point.
I played it at GDC, and you have like all these arms that you control, and you can be nursing a baby with one arm and like fixing other things.
What is the gameplay?
Yeah, what's the point?
I just explained it.
Like, what is the... button? Is it time management game? Is it
mostly? I mean, I only played it for about 30 seconds.
You basically
have to
be a dad, but you happen to also be an octopus.
So is it like kind of like Beer Tapper or whatever, where I'm like, this kid's over here and I gotta like hit this button for that arm and this button's my left arm and this button's my, and I'm like, is that what it
or
is?
Or Diner Dash, which would be more contemporary reference. People that weren't alive in 1982 will understand.
Well, they have them all out on the iPad now anyway, so Beer Tapper.
It's true. Yeah. Well, those
Burger Time.
Yeah.
Burger Time.
Those indie devs created a studio called Young Horses, and they actually announced Octodad 2, which is available now. You can go to Kickstarter, which is an amazing website. I know you guys have you've told me you found some board games on Kickstarter.
Oh, there's about 1,000 Kickstarter board games.
The Octodad right now, I think they're trying to raise $20,000 to create the game. Last time I checked, which was this morning, they're at about $13,000 to create this game, and they
$10 million.
$20,000. And, you know, within the first, I think there's still like 20 days left and they've already hit 13,000. So they'll probably hit their goal, hopefully.
Awesome.
To create Octodad 2. You should check it out because I think they're actually, I don't know if it's free online or if there's a demo.
PC only or?
It's PC only. But I think that it was one of the games that people hacked their Kinect on the PC so you can play the game with Kinect
hilarious.
On PC.
Unfortunately, you need four friends. Yeah, three friends.
Exactly.
To stand directly behind you.
Like, yeah.
We're all
doing
creating video right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In our mind's eye. A couple of weeks ago, there was a rumor that PopCap was going to be acquired by a company, and there was no one knew exactly what company that would be. And additionally to that rumor, it was said that the company was looking to sell for $2 billion. Now, this week, a couple of days ago, PopCap was acquired by EA, Electronic Arts, and the deal is structured such that EA pays $650 million in cash to acquire PopCap plus $100 million in incentive bonuses. But then there's this whole laundry list of stuff that is attached to it that basically says that if they hit all of their bonuses, this entire deal could be worth as much as $1.3 billion for PopCap. The company that created Peggle, who... I mean, some would say famously for, you know, carbon copying some games. I mean, Gameloft, I think, is accused of this doing the same thing. But they've also created some really great original experiences, like Peggle, Plants vs. Zombies. Now all of that under...
It's the house that Bejeweled built.
It's the house that Bejeweled built.
What else? Tell me else. So I know Peggle's Plants vs. Zombies, Bejeweled. What else?
God, there's about a thousand.
I think but that are any other that are amazing, wonderful games I should be playing? Or
you could look it up on the old internet.
That's kind of cheating. Well, I'm trying to think. There was the Fishing Frenzy thing, I think, was also on XBLA. I think that was a game that they originally created.
Oh, I have Fishing.
Bejeweled. Actually, Dan, Bejeweled 2.
Which is interesting. That this
keep
huge,
vamping. I'm looking at
a huge expensive thing. It's almost like PopCap is like the Blizzard of casual games. They have like three huge games.
But think about it. But what more do you need? Peggle's awesome.
Yeah,
and it's
Bejeweled
on every
awesome.
Platform.
Like Plants vs Zombies, awesome, and you can get it on anything.
And
so
now
what
you
more
can.
Do you need?
Because both of those,
but you
games,
barely have to pay for it. It's like
I know it's
Astro Pop
weird.
Is a great one,
but you
Astro
know
Pop
if you sell
good.
It at a dollar,
Bookworm,
and you sell
Bookworm,
Bookworm. I could do an entire podcast just on Bookworm. I played it when I was working my day job. We would have competitions that would we'd leave the computers on all night, right? And I think I may be. Have one of the top scores ever of I was in the millions and millions of points and
you were the last bookwormer.
God, I love that game.
You were taken up under the earth by the book.
What
bookworms.
Else we got?
So John Riccitiello at EA said
Zuma.
That the
Sorry.
Zuma,
oh, yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah,
Zuma. Another great game on XBLA. I used to play that. I was one
Chuzzle.
Of the first,
Chuzzle's big.
It was one of the first games that the XBLA had. Zuma.
Yeah, I remember that.
So John Riccitiello at EA said that this acquisition of PopCap will only add revenue to EA, and they're not looking to change any of the formula that EA that PopCap already employs. The thing that surprised me the most out of this story is how many people do you think work at PopCap? Would you believe that 450 people work at PopCap?
That goes to my point. It's like, what game?
What
know,
is? I mean, they're creating
they
the atom bomb or some shit over there. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Pay no attention to PopCap. Play more videos.
It's like everything's magnetized for some reason, and shit's just going off in the background. Wow. But that's a huge acquisition. I mean, EA is not shy about picking up companies. They've picked up Chilingo, and they've picked up Playfish, and a lot of casual stuff. And they have EA Play, which is their casual label,
right.
Which does like The Sims and everything. And they have Easy.
Mirror's Edge.
Oh yeah, they did the
iPad
one.
Version.
Yeah,
was great,
amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know they also have Easy that does like Battlefield Heroes, so they're on a big casual kick, which they find is going to be you know the biggest push for them. Also announced just a couple days ago, Peggle and Plants vs Zombies both coming to Facebook.
Right. Thank God.
Finally, right?
Thank God.
Now you can pay someone to.
I can't believe I had a part
Facebook.
Of me that I wasn't playing those games.
Now you can play it everywhere,
but. I still don't have Angry Birds.
Yeah, wait. You can play in Google Chrome if you want for some reason. Moving on to some news that wasn't really surprising. Elder Scrolls Skyrim, a game I've already mentioned, is one of my most anticipated of the year. Not going to get a demo, unfortunately.
Who wants a demo? Nobody wants a demo.
That'd be a tough game to demo, though, wouldn't it?
Right.
It's so
the
massive.
Thing, the reason Time why I put demo. This in here is because remember when I was here and we were talking about Deus Ex Human Revolution and I played the first 10 hours of that game?
Yeah.
And
wow. You did not like.
No, I did. I thought the first time I played it, I couldn't get into it, and then I kind of paid attention. I fell in love with it. Don't change my words, Jeffrey Cannata.
I believe you hated it.
The thing,
classic Cannata. I've seen this movie before. He does this on here too.
Yeah, all the time.
Oh, Sav.
So the thing that
thanks for saying I'm awesome, Dan.
The thing that I found interesting about this is like, why would you want it? Because I think the thing that I don't want to do is have to kind of go back and do that introductory stuff again. That was kind of the problem of me playing.
Nobody wants a demo. It's my point.
Yeah, it's strange that people even thought that you know there would even be one. I don't remember
like,
releasing a demo in the past for other games. Maybe following release,
Oblivion would have worked just because the introductory dungeon stuff right. could have been a demo. If it was, I don't remember, but
it was.
Yeah. I mean, that is a very sort of easily removable section that you're in a tunnel and...
I think it's just so hard with, like, these massive RPGs to really get a sense of it in a small slice.
Yeah.
I think, if anything, though, like, where I see that going, though, is eventually they'll just give you, like, a time. You'll be
time
able to download
demo.
The whole game and you just get 2 hours or an hour.
Which is what PlayStation Plus does if you rent
which
games
is actually
them,
a
60-minute
really
demo.
Good feature for games you're sort of on the fence about.
The problem
I think it's fantastic.
The problem with that is the... The reason why you see mostly first party stuff on there is because those companies have to pay for that bandwidth.
For the bandwidth, yeah.
I mean, you do see like Ubisoft. I think Assassin's Creed Brotherhood is there now, but like it's most like Infamous 2 you can buy right there now, which is really interesting because you buy a game that just came out digitally.
I've definitely bought more Xbox Live Arcade games because I got to the end of the demo and it went bloop. You just got an achievement. Do you want to buy the
phone? Oh, game? That is the, and that's that the is best the devil.
That is the ultimate carrot. They pop all some stuff up and say, "Hey, if you want this to show up, just give us your."
Like you may have sat and thought about it, and maybe bought it later or not, but that achievement's there, and I was thinking about buying it. And
kind of like,
I don't want to redo that if I do buy it.
Right?
Yeah, I want to be able to pick it. Keep going.
That actually, when I moved out here, I had to. We talked about this. I had to change my gamer tag to an American company.
I heard you talking about that. What?
It was a pain in the ass. And well, Sony's is no different. I can't use Netflix on my PlayStation Network, except I can create a U.S. account and use that.
Really, they do the same
free.
Thing because on the computer I can.
Well, because but you don't have to pay to use Netflix on PlayStation 3 like you do for Xbox.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But that was one of the things that I love about the fact that I had to do it. I don't really care about achievements anymore because I think I have 140 of them on my new account. So to me, I'm totally cool with it. And last thing I want to mention with the news is Play for Japan, the charity organization that was developed following the tragedy that happened in Japan, has, we've mentioned before, they've hit over $120,000 in charitable donations that they, not donations that they get, but they set up eBay auctions to sell video game related material. They've sold stuff from a ton of different companies. Their album that we heard Billy Berghammer, who's a part of that group, talk about, and Andrew Pfister, has finally come out. It's available now on iTunes. You can download it, and it has everyone from Bear McCreary is on it. Koji Kondo is on there. Sorry. There is, if you buy it on iTunes, there's an exclusive Super Mario track, a melody, two piano melody of Super Mario. So check it out. I think it's like 18 tracks for $9.99. It's also going to be available on the Amazon iTunes, the Amazon store on July 15th, which I think is actually, is it today? It might be available today. So yeah, check it out. It's available in US, UK, and Canada, and it's going to be available worldwide later on. All proceeds of the album go to the Japanese relief efforts. I believe it is Japanese Red Cross. So check that out, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes if you want to download it on any of those platforms.
It's awesome.
That's going to do it for the show. Before we end it, we have a little thing we like to call finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Mr. Andy Reid, finish him.
Well, Nintendo, I'm sorry. You're finished for me.
Oh, I thought you were apologizing.
No, you know, it's going to take a lot to get me back. That's all I'm going to say. I'll never say never, because you never know. But it's going to take a lot to get me back.
You said never a lot in that sentence, actually.
I know. Well, you're right.
He literally was doing a finishing move on
Nintendo. He actually, I think he did.
I did. That was an uppercut.
Mr. Daniel Trachtenberg, finish him.
I have a pet peeve of something that you guys have probably, I'm sure you understand, and it may have been brought up on this show before.
Garnet Lee.
We'll see.
Yeah,
Garnet Lee. Thank God that guy's not here. Hadouken, Garnet Lee. So
that was downright fierce, Dan.
That was with my special. Save games. The screen that pops up that says, if you quit now, you will lose whatever. I can't even recite that for you because there's never a moment that I'm ever completely clear on what it is that's going to happen.
I brought this up somewhere. I think a GDC or something. I brought this up somewhere to a developer.
Oh,
and it's mandated by Microsoft.
But there just has to be.
They have to have that verbiage.
But there needs to be. We need to find another verbiage. I don't have a problem with the message that it's saying. It's important to let me know that. And I don't have a problem. I don't want everything to be auto-saved. You know, I like that there's like an acknowledgement of whatever. But I'm always not sure is the thing I always have to play the game until the next, or it's funny because it's the game we can't talk about, you know, and I'm like, I have to like arrive in the next checkpoint, whatever it is. And I'm like, but then it's like, well, does this include checkpoints or is it just including the last world I entered?
Yeah. You know? We're in 2011. Games should be smart enough to know that I just saved.
Yeah. Or, yeah. And like, say like, it's cool. You just saved a second ago. So go ahead.
Yeah.
But turn it off.
Yeah, knock yourself
like,
out.
Inform me. Let me know.
You know what? Do whatever
you deserve. A Slurpee. Go get one. It's cool.
Go get one. Mr. Jeff Cannata, finish him.
This might not be news to many people that are listening, but it was news to me. I like me some memes. There's some memes. And there's a new meme that I just got a hold of, and I want to share with you guys. Maybe you guys have seen it.
Okay.
And I haven't.
Maybe I'm the last person to know about this. But there's a meme that going around that is called Guile's song goes with everything. Have you heard this?
No.
The original song from the original Street Fighter II, Guile, you know, like digital, like kind of, you know, computer sounding music, which I wish we could drop in right now because it's hilarious. Played with different kinds of video.
Okay.
And it goes with everything.
Really?
And there's like 1,000 YouTube videos. Like,
pull one that you're thinking of.
There's a Simpsons one where Homer's dancing. There's like this horrible, terrible, racist KFC commercial with this guy dancing with chicken wings. That it just, there's like all these different.
That's brilliant. Why didn't I think of that?
It's really
funny. That's internet gold.
Yeah. I spent at least an hour just
what else giggling. Goes with everything that I could do?
My finishing move is going to be something I already talked about, and that's, again, to say thank you to the community at Shaq News for creating something as wonderful as ShaqCon. I've never been a part of a community that does so much for each other, and it's not even really that they are always commenting on the news stuff or that they're ever in one specific area. I mean, if you go to the chat news thread in Shaq News, it is a million people talking about a million different things, and everyone, for the most part, is very inviting and wonderful and warm, and there are front pagers that get involved a little too much.
Up.
But I love the community there, and I want to thank them for creating that event, and you know, hopefully next year we'll be able to go there. ShaqCon 2012.
Just mad you didn't get invited.
I just want to get an all-inclusive paid trip to Vegas. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Zav, you did a great job filling in for
Garnet.
Hey,
thanks, guys.
Great
I appreciate
job hosting.
It.
We miss Mr. Lee.
We do. But, Garnet, come back to us, please.
Yeah.
We need the jar. We need to find charitable donations for other companies.
Wait, who?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, for a second I was like, what's going on? Did I screw something up at the very end of the show? Thank you, Mr. Daniel Trachtenberg, for joining us. Of course, we could find you on totallyradshow.com, or is it revision3.com/?
Same thing.
Okay.
It's all forwarded. And Danny TRS on the Twitter.
On Twitter. Mr. Andy Reid, DJ Andy Reid.
Thanks for having me.
Thank
this has
you
been
very
a,
much.
A real treat for me.
We appreciate it
for us too, man.
I'm happy to be down. Next time when I tell Garnet 2 months ahead of time that I'll be in town and hey, come on the show, maybe he'll do the courtesy
you know
of
what?
Showing up.
Tell me. That way he doesn't know, and then you'll just show
all
up.
All right, then he'll be here. Oh, that's awesome.
So we can find Andy Reid and your music at 44thandfilth.com. You have facebook.com/44thandfilth.
And Twitter. They're all the same. And
DJAndyReid.com
and every social media site known to man /DJAndyReid, you'll probably find.
There's a new one, you know.
Oh, you're on Friendster.com
/Friendster.
Just make one up, you know. Like,
I was about
whatever,
to make a Friendster joke. Mr. Jeff Cannata, of course, also TRS.
Yeah, I'll plug Comic-Con one more time just in case there's anybody out there that is at Comic-Con and needs something fun to do Friday night at 8. Dan and I will both be there with Alex and a lot of wacky stuff. And literally, we're not joking, there's a very awesome video game-related announcement kind of debut thing that we're going to show. It's going to be really cool.
That we're going to show. We're showing
really?
Something.
Yeah,
wow.
it's probably the only place you will be able to see this thing. That is very cool.
I have guesses, and we're going to talk about guesses when we're finished the show. Thanks for joining us, everyone. You could find me at twitter.com/zavxav. Jeff, you're at Jeff Cannata.
Yeah, 2 N's, 1 T.
And, of course, go to shacknews.com. Read all about the latest gaming news. Now, I promised myself I wouldn't use Garnet's catchphrase to end the show, but I do want to thank everyone for joining us. If you've made it this far into the episode,
and we'll goats, see you. You have to say.
And I'm not saying it. And we'll see you next week on Week in Confirmed.
Peace.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop. My shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. They try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance because they already.
Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.